Blog Talk Radio. Peace, peace. Peace to you and yours. Peace to you and yours. This is Know the Ledge Radio, and you are now rocking with the best. Yes, indeed, this is your host, Brother Blue Pill. All right, I'm awaiting my co-host, Brother Red. Peace to the family. Peace to you and yours. Welcome back to another jam-packed festival, okay, audio festival this is. Know the Ledge Radio. All right, KTL Radio presents the world according to Kamechi Ube. Very, very, very dear show to us. One that has been extremely long awaited, you know what I'm saying? So we're finally here. The cycle is finally, or the cycle is complete for that matter. Let me go and get my co-host here if it's anything that he got to say about this thing here. Call us from the 347. Peace.
Peace, peace. Peace to the universe. Peace to the family, welcome to Know the Ledge Radio. This is your co-host, the brother Red Pill. What's happening?
What's good with you?
Oh, man, everything's good. All right. How was good with you?
Oh, you know, all is well. You know what I'm saying? It's doing the knowledge. It's one of them New York days where you just got to sit back and do the knowledge.
No doubt. No doubt.
Same thing here.
It's one of those kickback days, you know, rainy days. You know how that is.
Absolutely, you know. But one thing that we always got to be mindful of, because people like to always give a, you know, they always want to speak about the solemn attributes of the rain and not acknowledging that water for what it really is. And it's the foundation of life, you know what I'm saying? It cleanses, it renews, and all of those good things that water is associated with. So we need to rejoice when we see the waters in other parts of the planet, you know what I'm saying? Like, sight of rainfall, it elicits all types of emotions because they understand the science. So I definitely want to acknowledge the rain as well for its powers of renewal, you know?
Can't stand the rain. Yeah. That's what's up. What's good, though? So what's going on for your weekend? Anything going on in the NYC that we should know about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what I'm saying? We want to inform the family about the New Life Expo.
Oh, yeah, New Life Expo.
Yeah, yeah. That's called a kind of gargantuan.
Yeah,
all right. That dope. If you give me a second, I'll pull up the necessary information. I mean, what the family needs to know off the break is that it's going to be held on 34th and 8th Avenue at the New Yorker Hotel. It might have started today. Yeah. No one knows. They're going off. Yeah. You know, anyway,
are you
going to
be vending?
I will not be vending this particular year. I'm definitely going to be in the building with some of my goodies, but I won't be officially, you know, set up or what have you.
Okay.
I'll just be enjoying all of the treats that will be there. You know.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to go to the New Life Expo, see the new technology, the new products, literature, and all other things that are
all
presented.
All that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 10:19 to 10:21, you know, jumped off the day, family, from 3:30 p.m. is when it kicked off to 10 p.m., so they got about an hour to go. All right, tomorrow is going to be 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday is 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. You dig? And they just came back from a cruise. You know, they went to, they had a seminar at sea, Carnival Liberty, October 6th to the 13th. You know, so they got some stories to tell.
Who was that?
The New Life Expo people, you know.
Oh, they did a cruise. And then right after that, the expo started?
Yeah, yeah. Talk about lining them up.
They swagged out, yeah.
Yeah. So this is, I'm going to just give you a glimpse, you know what I'm saying, because, you know, the community needs this as well. They talk about doing big things, and we already experienced the magic of the high seas. So, you know, just to get a glimpse, you've spoken many times about the fact that the quote-unquote conscious community or people that are seeking awareness is not exclusive to what we deem in term the quote-unquote conscious community. You know, that is something that is expansive and it's inclusive of people from all walks of life, all shades and all hues, and yada, yada, yin. You know what I'm saying? So, oh, let me find out. Okay. Yeah, she double booking.
Oh, yeah.
She double booking. They took a 7-day cruise, Miami to the Mayan Riviera, Cozumel, Belize, Isla Roatan, and the Grand Caymans. Okay? And they joined.
Who threw that cruise?
I just explained to you the organizers of the New Life Expo. They had Carl Kalaman, you know, and a host of other people that you might not recognize. Victoria of Light, Maureen St. Germain, Mary Beth Morawski, Jill Danny.
Those are legends on Roswell Avenue in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Names right
legends.
There.
Mark Beck is the organizer of the New Life Expo.
Kalaman's still around?
Yeah, Kalaman's still around. Nikki Scully, Sean David, you know, these are the big wigs and, you know, the various different quote unquote conscious communities that you know nothing about.
Yes. I had a very interesting theory that I was sharing with some friends of mine today about Caucasian people and their evolution, rather, you know, just what I've noticed. But I guess tonight's show, being that it's the world according to Kamita Yube, that he probably could give me some answers, you know, as we could reason and politic about it. So I'm gonna bring it up. But it has a lot to do with consciousness, right?
Okay.
And the and white people, quote unquote, you know. I don't wanna use too many misnomers, but you know, you guys know what I mean. Euros. But yeah.
Yeah, did you get to catch any of that footage from the Alfred E. Smith Memorial Foundation dinner with Obama and Romney?
Let me tell you something. I mean,
something.
I caught Romney clips, you know, because everybody knows I rocks with Romney, so. I rocks with Mitt, you know what I mean? I think he's a funny dude. Nah, for real, he's a funny guy, you know. I'm not team Romney, but I listen to what Mitt has to say because, you know, I did Obama, you know what I mean?
Right.
I rode out with his sound bites in 08, things like that, you know. But, yeah, it was very interesting. It's such a smack in the face for everyone that's so invested their time and energy into this political theater. You know, these two birds, these two feathers of one bird, two wings, rather, of one bird, which is ultimately that
right.
Vulture, you know, parading as an eagle. And once again, and it never fails, every election, every presidential election, you see it at the end of the election. They sit down at the table with the cardinal. I think it was Pope John Paul when he was alive. And was it Pope John Paul wasn't? Oh, he wasn't a part of that festivities.
But the Bush one?
Oh no. Yeah, my bad. Not Pope John Paul. My bad.
Cardinal.
Damn.
It was Cardinal O'Connor, right? Back in the days.
Them dudes, yeah.
Yeah, my bad. Pardon me, y'all. And I mean, it's hilarious for those that are looking at this fiasco for what it is, is right. And the people, y'all fall for that, you know what I mean? And I put the post up on my Facebook, and I had to quote, you know, that famous quote from Marie Antoinette, you know what I mean? Like, fuck it, feed them cake. Like, feed them cake. Like, you know what I mean? They just cake eaters at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? Like, what else is there to do with them?
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, you know, because we was broadcasting live last Tuesday. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to my brother Seth L for doing his thing.
Legend.
And, you know, a large populace of not only the esteemed citizens of this
dignified
democracy, yeah. You know what I'm saying? It was a lot of people checking the debate out, you know, and I caught it afterwards in its entirety.
Yeah.
So you say you rocks with Mitt,
huh? Yeah, Mitt's funny.
Yeah.
Mitt, I didn't even really see, yeah, I really didn't
really
check the second debate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't check the second one out. I saw sound bites of it. And it was what I inherently knew what it was going to be, that, you know, he was going to come hard in the second one, pause, and then he's going to, you know, probably follow that up on the third. These, you know, this was already cosmically predicted by the Cosmo physician. Correct? Wasn't it the brother who pointed that out?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it was almost a no-brainer when I saw that happen. And, you know, good old Barack, you know what I mean? Barry, giving it to him, you know what I mean? Stepping up to the plate, tough guy. Yeah. You know? And that's what's up. That's what happened. But,
I said it's theater, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's all theater.
Straight theater.
You know? Some people take this thing ultra serious, you know what I mean, where they're like, you know, they don't even talk to their kinfolk over this, or, you know, it may even go all the way into the bedroom, you know what I'm saying, where you got to sleep on the couch because you rocks with me, you know what I'm saying? You rock with me, you can't get none of this, yeah. You know, wait until election day to get some of this, yeah. You know, things like that be going on, tearing up the household.
That's real talk.
You know, and it's all a game. And it's all a game. They sitting at a dinner with each other. Like, I'm not even talking about they going in. Like, their jokes are totally, like, revealing how much of a hypocrisy this whole thing is. Like, they take everything from the election and just make jokes out of it. You know, so, you know. It is what it is.
Basically.
You dig? It is what it is. Somebody should drop a link in the chat room, too. So for anybody who wants to see the correspondence dinner, could check it out. Because a lot of people don't even know about that.
Yeah. Damn sure don't.
They're totally unaware of the fact that they sit down at dinners together, both candidates or both opposing parties, and chop it up. You know what I mean? With the damn Cardinal, you know what I'm saying, and all kind of other correspondents from media, and they roast each other, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's like Polite and them said on their show, all of this is theater, you know what I mean? Y'all see these fighters and whatnot, I think they really want to tear each other's heads off, but behind closed doors, it's all, you know what I mean, it's all contractual, you know what I mean, it's all theater, you know, may the best Denzel win. It's all a gimmick. So once again, stop giving them your energy. You know what I'm saying? Don't even pay attention to it. You know, you could laugh at Mitch jokes. You know, but don't get a Mitt haircut.
Yeah.
Like, don't go all the way there with it.
Proud to announce, and I will be dropping a link in the chat room. right? Your brother, A.A. Rashid, has released Batman Mafia mixtape. You know what I'm saying? Long awaited, long overdue.
Yes. And is this a milestone in conscious hip hop? Because it's on thatpiff.com, and I've never seen a conscious mixtape on thatpiff.com. Like, we're finally getting there.
I don't think he puts it in that box either, so I won't do that to him. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't call this a conscious mixtape. You know what I'm saying? This is somebody with, material that pretty much stands on its own. So.
Yeah. I'm going to read the description of what he calls it.
Yeah, please do.
But shout out to that brother, A.A. Rashid, the Kabbalah God, for his contributions to the movement. Shout out to Ashraf,
Dynamic Certified as well. Yeah. Good brothers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They appear on that as well as some dudes named the Red and the Blue Pill. Shout out to them.
Shout out to those guys.
Yeah, shout out to those guys.
Good bars. Yeah, and the mixtape is fire. I'm talking about total ride out music. You know what I mean? Super, pick a cut. You can spin that any club. You know what I'm saying? You could play that with the Knuckle Draggers, Tree Huggers, Puritans, everybody alike, and they'll get
well-rounded.
It, you know what I'm saying?
It's well-rounded.
Yeah, and like I said, this is a brother who, ultimately proved himself when it came to this whole, taking the craft serious, because like I said, I slept on him. You know what I mean? I'm going to keep it 1,000 with you. I slept on him when he was like, I want to rhyme. I want to get it in. You know what I mean? I want to put it down. And I was like, everybody does, brother. Relax. He definitely has made me, he humbled me in those aspects.
To the side, like, all right, watch out.
This
is a friend of me.
And this is,
I'll dig it.
And this,
yeah,
that's what happens. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes you have to really, for the family that's out there, like, you may have a younger brother or older brother or cousin or just somebody on your team, and they really want you to see and hear and pay attention to the art that they want to create. And they haven't released it as of yet. It hasn't gotten out of them. It's still, incubating in that cavern. And, I encourage
They're
all
cooking.
To give
yeah.
them a chance. It's cooking. You know what I'm saying? Did you have that? Has everybody ever heard Jay-Z's first single? He was rapping mad fast. Like, are you serious?
Terrible.
You know what I mean? Like, terrible. You know what I'm saying? So even if our first, second, and third or fourth offering is not what we may deem as John Blaze, you know what I'm saying? We still have to encourage those of us amongst us that are the creators, the co-creators, to keep going with their mission, you know what I mean? Especially if it's one of their lifelong dreams, if it's one of their desires and whatnot. So, like I said, super-duper kudos to that brother, you know what I mean? In a perfect world, we'll all be on tour this summer, getting it in, preferably in Europe, you know what I mean? Getting those pounds and all of that, and just,
right.
Adding on to the rise and intelligent music. Can I correct the conscious statement and say intelligent music? Thinking man's music? Because you got a lot of MCs out there that are, the Absols of the world, the Kendrick Lamars, the J. Coles, they're creating thinking man's music, somewhat intelligent, so that's what's up.
No doubt.
And for all of you producers and video directors out there, mixtape DJs, club DJs, all of y'all, thank y'all for playing your part. And, if you're out there, it would be in your best interest, to make yourself known. Because, like I said, there's a movement, and it's going on. It's kind of going on without you guys, But your help and your contribution is well needed at this point. So, you know, give us a shout. Give AA a shout. Give God Hop, Psy Rock, Soul Messiah, Star, Patara. Shout out to Dead Prez. Shout out to Yasin Bey. You know what I mean? Shout out to all of the guys out there that are doing the damn thing.
Indeed. I want to give a shout out to DJ Mo. You know what I'm saying? A brother I ran into in the city. I was making some moves through the city yesterday. The brother just, you know, approached me like, red or the blue, which one? So, you know, he let me know.
Yeah, I think I could do a whole show on that. The red and the blue sightings.
Red and the blue sightings.
Yeah, it's getting serious now. You know what I mean? And shout out to, and definitely, you know, definitely shout out to the brothers and sisters that are out there. You know what I mean? The KTL University, the Silent College. You know what I mean? For identifying yourselves when we see you in the streets.
Yeah, because they out there. You know what I'm saying?
They out you. Yeah.
They out you.
Know,
so.
They are out.
Shout out to that brother. You know what I mean? He do his things on the wheels of steels or what have you. I'm going to send him some wax real soon. And, Let's keep
and
pushing,
it's, y'all. It's a beautiful thing when you can actually meet, you know what I'm saying, the family and the matrix and the physical, when they materialize in this physical world and whatnot, you chop it up. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, the quality, you see the quality of membership when you meet these brothers.
That's the payoff, you know what I'm saying? Like,
it is.
When you get to actually meet the family and see what your work has produced, you know what I mean? And they'll let you know. They'll let you know. And again, that's that. It makes it all the while worth it. So shout out to the family that's out there. Shout out to the Libras. You know, we're going into Scorpio real soon. Like, I want to give a shout out to C.A.J. I saw that today's her birthday. I want to give a shout out to my grandmother.
C.A.J.
Yeah, tomorrow's her birthday. And
no doubt,
shout out
grandma.
To my beautiful wife. Her birthday is Sunday. So,
shout out.
It's a long list of the Libras, you know what I'm saying? And we're going to be exiting out of that and jumping right into Scorpio. And you already know, I ain't got to tell you. It's going down.
Down. Yeah.
I mean, so definitely shout out to the Libras to bring the balance in life. You know what I mean? Scorpio's a bring.
Shout out to my pop.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to my pops, T-Bone Pickens. My dude, I see you. See you on your born day. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, man. So, it's about that time.
Let's do it.
Now, yeah, we could easily. How long have we been waiting to do this show here?
For a minute now.
I'm guesstimating about 2 years, you know what I'm saying? The show's
Ooh,
been
yeah,
in
like 2.5.
You feel me? Catching his brother in passing and us promising to connect and make what's going to happen tonight happen and everything in due time. You feel me? So with no further ado, I want to read the description and present to you our esteemed guest, Brother Kometche U. So tonight's program, KTL Radio presents The World According to Kometche U, Bay. All right? Join Nobles Radio for another explosive episode featuring Morris teacher Kometche U Bay. This brother has become a staple on the Harlem lecture circuit for his wide array of knowledge and information that spans the topics inclusive but not exclusive to rights to travel, UCC, Morris jurisprudence, finance, law, and politics as it pertains to Morris, both franchise and disenfranchised. Where does the more exist in finance? What entails economic freedom? Get the answers to these questions as well as many more and join us as we welcome the brother to his inaugural KTL radio appearance Bring your pad and your pen, because class is in session, family. Remember, we told you. Call us from the 347-626. Peace. Peace, brother. Come back to you. Islam. Peace.
Islam. You can hear me, Noble?
Yes, we can. Greetings.
Yes, greetings, man. I just appreciate you, you know, Blue Pill and Red Pill, you know, for having me on and honoring me like this, because it's been a minute, you know, that we have spoken, and I know that, you know, your guys have been trying to get me on the air, you know what I'm saying? So I just can't wait to share the knowledge and information, you know, in reference to the liberation of our people, because it's desperately needed, brother.
No doubt. No doubt. Family, this is a frontline soldier. You know, this is not somebody who's a Facebook Moore scholar. You know what I'm saying? I guess there's a time and a place for Facebook Moore scholars as well. You know, but this brother actually not only teaches the classes, but makes very special appearances on behalf of the family in stress and duress as well. You know, this is a brother that will stand with you. You know what I'm saying? That actually walks with you, not walks away from you when it's time to put that work, that twerk in. So definitely want to make that distinction.
Yes, so salutes to you, brother Kamete, you, for your continued class that you've been given in Harlem for the last 2 years, you know what I'm saying, waking the people up, enlightening them with that information. I've had the pleasure of, you know, building with a few of your students, you know what I'm saying, and they are very well informed. So, you know, honors for the good works that you've continued to do, because I know it's not in, I won't say it easy, but it's not a very, it's not an easy job.
That's true, brother. You're right that it's not an easy job, because there's a lot of research that has to be done. And not only that, when the research is being done, you got to make sure that the information is correct, because, you know, one thing that I've noticed, Noble, is that, you know, a lot of information is going out there, you know, but the question is the information misleading? And then, you know, we have the Moors, you know, saying our people, you know, we can't afford to be misled. You know, a brother or a sister may mean well, you know, but we got to start checking ourselves, because them Europeans out there, them devils is not playing, brother. So we got to be on our square.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I mean, because ultimately, one of the biggest issues, I would say, that the family may have with the Moorish information, right, is the fact that they are not certain as to what is misinformation versus what is right and exact, because of the many abuses and the many, you know, attempts at misdirecting people that some of our, you know, contemporaries have taken, whether it was from a nefarious position, or they just didn't know. They were just sharing information that was either outdated or incorrect without their knowledge. So a lot of people are very wary in terms of, you know, certain paperwork and other approaches as to obtain, just do certain things like cancel certain contracts and things of that nature. So what do you see in terms of individuals that are coming to you with their skepticisms?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you brought that out, Noble. Because, of course, you know, like you stated earlier, that, you know, we do have class, you know, at the National Black Den in Harlem. And those are the issues that do come out. It's just interesting that you just, you know, broadcasted that. And I, of course, I do address it. You know, like, for instance, you know, I remember, like, about 15 years ago, all right, from the Great Seal National Association of Moorish Affairs, is where I was raised at, as a Moor. I remember brothers who was first coming into the knowledge, all right, one of the things they were talking about doing was getting rid of their Social Security number, all right, And where did they get that from? They didn't get that from out of the Great Seal. They got that from, you know, patriarch movements with the freemen or the white sovereign citizen movements or different groups. And then it's been said, you know, that, you know, the Social Security number should be a number you should be holding on to. And then you have a lot of brothers and sisters, you know, debating each other about it. And then, you know, like myself, I can give you some concrete information where I've been to what you call as a Global Truth Subservice course or class or conference at 55 Water Street, which is a place where, you know, the public can't even enter into that building. You have to have clearance to get into that building, all right? And being up in that conference and learning what the Europeans was dropping, all right, confirms about us holding on to the Social Security number, because when you get the QSUP to the Social Security number, you find out that that number, the QSUP number to the Social Security fund is in the billions of dollars. So now my whole science is about tapping into that money, you know what I'm saying, because that money is your money because of the fact that the account was assigned to you. You see what I'm saying? So it's not so much about trying to get rid of it or tapping out the system, but again, you know, this issue is a global issue. This is not something that's just going on in the United States. This is a global issue. You know what I'm saying? So they're controlling the global economy, all right? So trying to really get out the system is like saying you're getting out of the global economy. So that's the wrong perception and idea. So, you know, Noble Jewali have made it clear that it takes finance to lift a nation, you know what I'm saying? And unfortunately, we have substituted the European system. The only thing we have to do is begin to start studying diligently, because the European originally have gotten it from us anyway, all right? The banking system, the finance system, I did some serious research on that, and I'm going to be putting some material and start passing this out among more so they could see what's going on, because we were the masters of commerce and merchant. And the very thing that we were the masters of, now we become slaves and subjects of everything we were masters of. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's my take on it. Excuse me?
No, I said that's a very interesting observation, that everything that we were once masters over, we have now become subjects and slaves to, and that is so correct.
You know?
No.
So, yes. So, again, brother, you know, you gave an excellent topic for tonight's discussion, because, you know the knowledge that I have obtained is, it was prompted by Noble Jewali, you know, reading the material that he put out, studying, and then I said, oh, all right, so he's talking about finance, all right? So I started studying finance, because if finance is going to uplift us, you know, we have to analyze that. But one of the things that I say in class, to be clear, for those who are listening, you know, and my students who have, you know, been in class, and they can, of course, elaborate on this also, all right? But I do tell them, please spread the word and make sure this information out there, because this is not something that I should exclusively be teaching in my class. I don't acknowledge that. This knowledge I'm talking about should be in every one of our classes, because we should all be on the same page. But what I say in class is that, listen, if I can't beat them Europeans in law, I can definitely beat them in finance, which is equity, all right? And this is what we have to study. So there's some very awesome information that I have that we want to be putting out there and perpetuating about our brothers and sisters, because we need this information desperately, because of the fact that they are using finance against us, and we don't seem to realize that. And I can give you some examples of that tonight if you allow me to, my brother.
Please do.
All right. Let me give you a good example. All right. Well, there's quite a few books that I have in my presence. All right. One of them is called Vehicle Traffic Law. Another one is called The Consolidated Laws of the State of New York. And, of course, the section we're going to go into would be, of course, the CPL, which is the Criminal Procedure Law. And then I have another book in my possession that I always keep showing in class. It's The Dictionary of Finance and Investment Terms. It's by Barron's. You can get it at Barnes & Noble for less than $10. All right. And, of course, they have a dictionary of banking terms, too. It's by the same company, by Barron's. And then also I have a book that deals with what you call is Securities Law Compliance, all right? And this is by Alan H. Hessen. And, of course, this book, I had purchased this book going back in the early 90s, all right, from Strand's Bookstore. I paid $70 for that book, all right? And a good example of that, for instance, I will show you and demonstrate that on page from the book called Securities Law Compliance, on page 225, section 27 talks about what we call CAR, all right, or CARs. So people would say, you know, I'm going to purchase a car. So then the question is, what does that mean when you say you want to purchase a car? All right? The European is using financial terms that we are unfamiliar with. All right? Because when we hear the word car, we are actually thinking about, of course, the land vessel or the automobile that we see parked out in our garage or out front, you know, at the side of the curb. But now when you go into this book called Securities Law Compliance and you see that there's a what? An acronym, which means Certificate for Automobiles Receivable, all right? And this is what they say here. They say here it's a prepackaged pool of bank and finance company automobile loans on which 2 or 3 year debt has been issued with an overlying financial interest. The debt security is highly regarded and well-protected automobile loans. This is what they have here as cars. Now, the commissioner of motor vehicle, all right, because a brother or sister, they may be going down the street with their land vessel, and all of a sudden Rome stops them on the side of the road and says license and registration, and all of a sudden whatever the so-called violation you may get, you're going to get a traffic ticket. All right, but again, as I tell brothers and sisters, listen, go to Motor Vehicle. It's only $2.50. The book is called Vehicle and Traffic Law. We need to study that. But let me read you a segment that relates to cars in reference to the book on securities law compliance. On subsection 209 of the Vehicle Traffic Law, just look at the language what they're using here. They're talking about the Bureau of Motor Vehicles and the Department of Taxation and Finance is hereby abolished. The functions, powers, and duties of the Bureau of Motor Vehicle and the Department of Taxation and Finance are hereby assigned to the Department of Motor Vehicle. Each deputy commissioner in the Bureau of Motor Vehicle and the Department of Taxation and Finance shall continue office as the deputy commissioner in the Department of Motor Vehicle. So now, what are they telling you? They're telling you that the Department of Motor Vehicle is nothing other than what? The Department of what? Finance and taxation. This is what they're telling you. So the certificate of title, not the title itself, because as I taught in class, to make it clear, because we don't pay attention to prepositions like of means from. The certificate from the title, which means the certificate itself, that's the instrument that they're issuing you, all right, in reference to the finance, all right? So now when you get the ticket becomes what? A lien or bond. All right, and let me give you an example, because when you go to CPL, subsection 100.10, subsection 100.10, it specifically says here in section 2A, a simplified traffic information is a written accusation by a police officer or other public servant authorized by law to issue same. Now, stop right here. Look at the language what they use. They use the word issue. Now, are we paying attention to the language that they're using? No, we don't. Because we're too busy putting affidavits and whatever instruments that we're putting in or whatever writs we're putting in there. And the language that we're putting in these affidavits and these writs, it's not actually defining the problem or the issue. We're not getting to the root of the problem. We're too busy saying, oh, they don't got no jurisdiction. They don't got no delegation of authority. And them people are not talking about that. These people are talking finance. So it looks like we are foolish as a people that we coming in here talking about no jurisdiction and this is my status and you don't have no delegation of authority, but at the same time they're talking finance. So now when you go to what you call is the Dictionary of Finance and Investment Terms, look what they say about the word issuer, because the officer is the one who's going to be issuing the traffic ticket. And we all know that the word traffic means commerce. It says here for issuer,
legal entity that has the power to issue and distribute a what? Security. Issuers include corporations, municipalities, because this is exactly where you're getting the ticket at. You're getting it where? In a municipality. Foreign and domestic governments and their agencies. All right? Let me go to the word issue. That was issuer that I read because the officer becomes the issuer. But look at the issue that he's submitting you. That's the same term they use in the criminal procedure law, which is CPL 100.10, subsection 100.10. But the term issue here in the Dictionary of Finance and Investment Terms, look at the term they use. They use the term stock or bonds sold by a corporation or a government entity at the particular time. All right? This is what they're saying. So technically, what I'm saying here is that they're issuing financial instruments, all right, because of the fact that they're looking at you as being what you call is a debtor. And another terminology for the word debtor is defendant. And another term for the word debtor is what you call is remittance, all right, or what you call is remittance flow, all right? And the word remittance is another term for a debt owed. So they're saying you're the remitter. Where do you get these terms from? Well, for those who may cannot go to Barnes & Noble right away and get the Dictionary of Finance and Investments, you can go to Investopedia. Just go to the website. You're going to see the search engine. Start typing in the financial terms, and you'll see exactly what it is. Type in the CUSA. It'll explain to you. Type in the word bonds. All right, we have to begin to start looking at these different terms that they're using. Type in the word cause. So that way, when you begin to start educating yourself in finance, when you start structuring what you call is an affidavit, and brother, by the way, let it be the first to be heard on this show. Did you know that most Moors do not know that the word affidavit means finance? Most Moors don't know that. So when you're putting an affidavit together, technically that's structured finance. When you put a motion together, that's technically structured finance because the word motion means to move. Affidavit is the word where you find the word fidelity. Because you heard brothers and sisters talk about go to the website, fidelity.com. So when you talk about affidavit, those three letters in the middle of the word, which is an infix, because you have a prefix, a suffix, but then very, very rarely you hear them talking about an infix. And the same letters that you see in an infix is the same words that you will see or letters that you will see in the word fidelity. All right? So that shows that the sisters start studying finance because the only way we're going to start getting our currency flowing proper, all right, is finance. We're going to be getting into tapping into our treasury accounts, developing chargebacks, and creating financial freedom for our brothers and sisters because everything in the system is prepaid. And this is something that we, for some apparent reason, don't seem to realize that it's prepaid. We may say it, but the question is, are we looking in the right place? Are we studying the right information? Are we looking in the right books? Are we checking out the right agencies? Because the information is there. You know what I'm saying, brother? So the information is there. And so, again, we as a people, if we're looking for economic freedom, we have to come to the table and start putting this thing together properly so we can start liberating our people because, brother, we are suffering. Economically, we are suffering. I mean, I remember hearing back in the days with John Henry Clark and him, he made a comment. He said, we don't even make our own underwears. We wear other people's underwears. I mean, it sounds funny and it's embarrassing, but it's the truth.
It's the truth. Truth,
brother. You know what I'm saying? And we eating other people's food and wearing other people's clothing, you know, and having other people to shelter us, you know what I'm saying? And we are not economically sound. We're trapped. You know, we are political prisoners incarcerated in this system, and apparently you know, we are so complacent and so comfortable with the conditions that are around us that we fell asleep not realizing the condition that we're in, you know, and we're not even talking about the Negro, Blacks, and Coloreds, and we already know where they're at. I'm talking about Moors, Moors who are supposed to be conscious, or a conscious brother and sister who may not even acknowledge themselves as a Moor, but they're supposed to still be on that conscious level, even they're asleep, when it comes to this economic stability, you know, and progress that we're supposed to have as a people. We're the only one who do not have an economic resource to maintain what we should be having stable for ourselves. And we're not gonna make it if we don't come together. You know, only thing I see and hear is a bunch of bickering and arguing between us. You know, with the egos and the pompous attitudes, that's not going to make it. My brothers and sisters got to eat, all right? And it's serious. Them Europeans are not playing. And if you've been paying close attention, I don't know if you're aware of what's going on, but this is a guy named Warren Buffett and a whole host of other billionaires pull their money out of the American stocks, all right,
right,
and securing their money someplace else. So something is big about to happen. So, you know, but again, how many of us go by the Financial Times and pay attention to what's going on out there? You know, we have to have some type of political consciousness, economic consciousness, financial consciousness, money consciousness. We have to have it as a people. We have to have it, you know? So, brother, you know, again, I'm happy to be on your show to be able to demonstrate this knowledge, because what I notice is that when I do go around to different lectures and meetings, you know, and listen to audio tapes, video tapes, or YouTube pieces, that's all I hear. And it's this one is battling that one is battling this one, and I'm saying to myself, and none of us have anything economic going on for ourselves, you know? I mean, individually, a brother may got it going on saying, oh, I own stores and I own businesses, but as a whole, there's nothing happening. You know, I learned from a brother who came from Iran for quite a few months. He was telling me that he's trying to secure contracts in Somalia, and the Chinese are there. And he said, when the Chinese do business, they don't do business as an individual. He said, they do business as a government. So when you see these Chinese restaurants, they are forbidden to go buy food down at the farmer's market or E&B or ShopRite or A&P because they got their own trucks coming in. So Their government supplies them for everything they need, and the only thing they have to do is get up and go to work. So that was so what that tells you right there. That
I spoke
we
about
have
that the other night.
We in the ethers, brother. If you talked about that the other night, that means we in the ethers. That means that's that consciousness right there, brother.
I was in a Brother Polite's class, and I was speaking about the fact that when the family sees, you know, the occupation of their neighborhoods, whether it be, you know, the Koreans holding down the nail salon, Dominicans holding down a bodega, you know, Cantonese holding down this, African, you name it, you know what I'm saying? What they have to understand is they all come under the auspices of associations. None of them are moving individually. So, you know, they could be in the back of that restaurant and don't got to know English for 8 years. They're already accounted for, you know what I'm saying? They come into a system that has already been put in place to absorb them in, do what they got to do, and shuttle them out. You know, as the brother Red can attest, as I was through my travels these last few years up and down the Eastern Seaboard in particular, you know, getting on that Chinese bus, China bus, when you see the way that they congregate to do commerce, you know, they let little old ladies off in Greenbridge, South Carolina at 4 a.m., you know what I'm saying? They letting people off every stop they go to. You feel what I'm saying? And they just get into business. They jumping off the bus. You know, they might work in the restaurants. They might do whatever they do, you know, but they get to it. And the bus comes back, and it picks them up, and it brings them back to the city. You know what I mean? And it's just repetitious. They just do it again and again. And even though they might be on a bus sitting separate, you already know that they got that vibe where it's unity amongst them. Even if they might not be kicking it with one another, you know that pot is going somewhere bigger.
just because of the discipline that you see that they moving with. They ain't got to kick it with one another, but they know they got their unified front. You know what I'm saying? They know if something happens to one of them, the rest of them ain't going to stand by and just watch it. They're going to make a move. So, you know, it was a wake-up call. It was a shock to my system at first just to see how seamlessly they do this. Like, it's effortlessly. They don't even think about it. It just happens.
You know, it's interesting that you said that because being around our brothers and sisters, you know, when they do see that, as you say, it will be a shock to your system, right? Because it would shock me like it would shock you, brother, because we just have that level of consciousness. But being around some of our brothers and sisters, they'll see it, and you will hear them make a comment or a statement, and I'm sure this is a common statement you might have heard before, and those who are listening, Chinese man will come to no black man's store and he'll buy nothing from no black man. No. You missed the point. They got economics going on, all right? They're not going to economically decline or disassociate themselves from their economic stability to come to support you when you're not a part of that family group of economics. I mean, if you're talking about, like, for instance, Milana Karenga did a very powerful thing, Kwanzaa. You know, I raised my children when they were babies on Kwanzaa. They didn't even know what Christmas was, all right? And, of course, you know, the cooperative economics, all right, or the umoja, all right, just looking at those principles of Kwanzaa. We're not even talking about anything commercial, just looking at the principles. If our people was just to stick to the principles, that alone, brother, would change the course of how we would support ourselves as opposed to others. I remember, Noble, growing up as a child, where in the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, as I can recall, they had what you call as quote-unquote Black Solidarity Day, all right, where they took that day out where we stayed home and we didn't buy nothing from nobody, all right? We stayed home, and that was the best form of boycott that we can never display, because if all of our brothers and sisters can stay home on Thanksgiving and stay home on Christmas or any European holiday that comes up, brother, we're going to definitely make some noise without even saying one word, because they're going to want to know what's going on with the economy, because our people keep forgetting that the Wall Street is codified by colors. When the market is in the black, that's a good market. When the market is in the red, it's a bad market. Why? Because the red represents the so-called Indian who fought the devil, but the black turned around and allowed himself to be in bondage, what made it a good market. All right? So even when they use the term Black Friday, who's out there doing the shopping? I mean, you know, being on the bus or on the train, brother, I wouldn't even know about anything about Black Friday until I hear our women on the train start saying, oh, Black Friday is coming up. Or, you know, it's like a discount day for them. So they want to run out there and do as much of shopping as possible. So I said to myself, that's just interesting, because we don't lost the so-called Black Solidarity Day where we have kept our dollars in our pocket, you know, and they felt that. And now today, you know, like we lost that. It was like we had more unity back in the 60s and the 70s, but I'm a 60s baby. I've seen more unity and consciousness with us as a people back then than I see today. It's like we are getting further and further away from us supporting each other, even to a point, Noble, where there was a time where, you know, times might have been hard, all right, and your moms might have said, you know, go down to so-and-so's apartment and knock on the door and say, you know, get a cup of flour or sugar or rice or some eggs. You see what I'm saying? And then we would return, which means we bartered among each other. You know, just to even do that is to keep us stable, to barter among each other, just to keep us going. Like if another brother's in need or a sister's in need, you know, we help that brother, sister. I mean, like my man Juwan used to say to me, he said, well, remember the days we used to have a rent party that with a brother or sister, you know, we heard about them in the building and they was about to be evicted. And when we heard that, we, you know, on a Friday or on the weekend, we would throw a rent party for that brother or that sister. You know what I'm saying? We didn't know nothing about no Section 8. You know what I'm saying? Or no, you know, government housing subsidy. You know what I'm saying? Throw a rent party, Everybody cooked some food. They came there, you know what I'm saying, to that brother's or to that sister's house, you know what I'm saying, and set up a party, you know what I'm saying, and everybody would come through from the neighborhood and put money in there, and that brother's rent would have been paid about at least 2 or 3 months in advance. You don't even see that no more.
Mm.
You don't even see that no more, brother.
You don't even see that. Dang.
You know? So,
bad.
If a brother and a sister today is having a problem and they're about to be evicted, be it mortgage or rent, it's like they're on their own. Like, we are so out of sync and so insensitive to ourselves that we don't even come to the aid of each other. And I don't even see that no more. It's like you on your own. Like, you know, I got mine, you got yours. I'm like, damn, it's sad, brother. It's really, really sad. And, you know, and at that time, brother, the consciousness of the people, what we have today, they didn't have that, what we have today. If you could notice.
Yeah. My take on that situation, or my observation, rather, would be that the times that we are living in is a different times due to the program and the social engineering of our people to become individuals. This is the you know, the independent, you know what I'm saying? I'm the independent woman age. Like, you got people saying that they're independent, but they go to work. Right? You're independent, but you go to work from 9 to 5. You work for somebody, but you're independent. And then it's about the individual now. So this era, or this age rather, has been groomed via the entertainment or the music industry, you know what I'm saying, who has been allowed through the rappers and all of these other colorful individuals, they've now been allowed to be the voice of the thinking man. They dictate, you know, they dictate not only the trends, but they also dictate the mentality of our people through entertainment. It wasn't like that before. So now the era of the individual is out. So it's really about, I got mine, nigga, you need to go get yours. You know what I'm saying? Or look at me. You know, it's about, this is the look at me generation. So, and it's also a humongous crab in a barrel mentality. So those of us that are crawling out of the barrel, or have the perception or the misperception that we're crawling out of the barrel because we can afford our rent for this month, for those of us that get pulled down because we can't, you know, pay our rent this month, those of us that, you know, the crabs in the barrel have no problem with that because it's basically seen as, well, that's one less Negro to worry about. You know what I mean? So we're not, as a group, as and even in consciousness, you know what I mean? Even with this whole, you know, we're part of a community or part of an organization mentality, it's still fraudulent because it really doesn't show up on the surface. Because even in consciousness, like you said, brother, where, you know, our forefathers knew, they quote-unquote retained less information about the cosmos, about very intricate details of their anatomy and all kind of other things, even with that, they were still able to operate as organizations and move as a group. But nowadays, even with the consciousness, it is it's a gross representation of egotism and individuality. It's about, I'm hot, I'm as hot as my last lecture, you're not, you know what I'm saying? Or I got this many people on my blog talk show, I got this many likes, I got this many people coming around to see me and stuff. And it's really, you know, it's sad almost, because it's really about ego now. And like you're saying, the progress, when you sit down and say, in 4 years, what has been done? You know what I'm saying? Like, who's even planted a crop on somebody's land? Like, what's grown? What has been packaged? Like, what are we doing? And a lot of people come up with nothing.
That's true, brother. You know, my grandmother, I got to go down south and sit down with her, I'm going to have to get a recorder, and I suggest that everybody do the same if their grandmother is still living with them. Because, Noble, my grandmother's over 100 years of age, and now you know I got to sit down with her and learn from her how she maintained her condition. You know, one thing I can say, you know, you brought up a point about a woman may say, oh, I'm independent, but yes, she got a 9-to-5. No, sister, you don't know what independence is, because my grandfather was a brick mason, all right, in their own land and his own property. And he went out there and laid bricks independently on his own. He didn't work for nobody. Matter of fact, he even made his own bricks. He didn't even have to go to a company or a factory to go buy bricks. He made his own bricks, all right? And he designed them to your liking, all right? And whatever you wanted to put on the side of your house, because normally what he would do is put chimneys on the side, brick chimneys on the side of people's houses. This is what he would do, all right? But the beautiful thing about him was that when he did do it, you know, he didn't have to rely on it because he had a farmland. So they relied 90% on living off the earth and 10% living off of their labor as far as trying to get a contract to get paid for. So when he did make the money, they had, you know, so much savings, as they would say, that he had ability to buy more property because 90% of his living was off the land. He didn't have to go to a 9-to-5. Like, for instance, if you look at today, you get a paycheck. Your paycheck has to pay the rent. It has to buy the food. You have utilities to pay. And then, of course, you know, we definitely want to run into luxury. But at the same time, you don't got nothing left. All right? So if, God forbid, you lose that job, you know, it's either you're on welfare or you're unemployment. All right? My grandfather don't know what unemployment is, and he don't know what welfare is because of the fact that that was true independence. So it's just interesting that when you see a sister saying, oh, I'm an independent woman, she doesn't really know what independence is, because if you got to rely on somebody else to give you a job, all right, that you could be fired tomorrow, you're not independent. And so that's the false reality that she received, that she thinks she's saying something or doing something. But sister, if you really are independent, all right, you wouldn't need child support, if you get me what I'm saying, because you're going to need another income to take care of that child. So if you take the man to court for child support, if you're saying is that you need another income, all right, independent people don't speak like that, because they take care of their own. All right? So there's things that we have to look at and look at the conditions of the surroundings that surround us and see exactly what it is to be independent. But for some apparent reason, we have a false reality, and brother, you said it right, because they're looking at these television shows, they're looking at this entertainment, and unfortunately, the big gurus in the entertainment world is giving a false reality to our brothers and sisters about being independent, all right? And to me, they're not even independent, Noble, because one thing that we can say that we can reach them to bring them down to earth, to show them where that is, listen, brother, I don't care how many millions of dollars you make. You do not own your house. You do not own your car. You don't even own your children, because your child, your house and your car could be taken away the same way as a person who's on welfare. What's the difference of a person on welfare who only thing they may have in their life is their children? They may not even have the car, or they may not have the house, or they may not have the job, but the only thing they have left is their children. That still can be taken away. So the person who's making the big change, going down the street with whatever Lamborghini or whatever it is, or Mercedes or BMW, not knowing that that could be taken away from us, all right? I was checking out Cat Williams. He came, he did a comeback earlier part of this year, you know, well, the latest part of last year going into the new year of this year. And he was kind of pompous of the things he was saying, because he said that he within a 48 month period, he's been arrested about, I think, 14 times or something to that effect. And then he made a comment about he never had to walk into court. He never had to show up in court. But at the same time, you came back 3 years out of retirement. Why? So 14 times you went to court, how much money that you kicked out to them lawyers to sit out of court? You know those lawyers milk this brother dry, hitting them with probably 20 grand. The average brother out here who could possibly afford an attorney, he wants 5 grand if it's a criminal case, right up front. And by the time that case is over, he's going to get 10 grand or 15 grand out of that brother. So now this is Cass Williams. Well, first of all, they're going to assess you based upon your assets. So, you know, your bond is going to be big, and the attorney's going to charge you a lot because he know you can afford it. So if you've been there 14 times, all right, well, you multiply that how many times they kept hitting him, and now you know why he come back out of a three-year retirement, because he needs that money to maintain his luxury. But if he had the knowledge, all right, to realize what his position is as far as these traffic tickets or whatever charges they're charging him with, because, again, most of our brothers don't, and sisters don't even realize the public and private side. As I was saying to you earlier this evening, as we were speaking, brother, I was in federal court, and I'm sitting down here in federal court, and I'm listening to the deliberation of this chief of police who put together a stop and frisk search manual that is not even legal or lawful. And this lawsuit is about to be won by the plaintiff. They're going to be reviewing back on Monday at 9 o'clock. It's in room 15C, 500 Pearl Street. I've been there today. I'm going to be there Monday, and I'm going to be there Tuesday. Tuesday is the last day. And when I get a chance, I'm going to get the minutes because, brother, the information they was dropping was critical, critical to our community, because who are they hitting the most? We are getting hit. And this particular chief of police, what he was doing was articulating information concerning what you call is a UF-250, which is a particular form that an officer has to fill out by law and Department of Policy. And that form itself would be incriminating to an officer, which we are unaware of. So, but this was a part of training the new recruits with this same particular form. But, brother, if Cat Williams knew this information about was this done correctly, the case could be thrown out automatically. Like, matter of fact, I have a case right now where a brother was stopped on a state highway, was never arrested by the officer, but he put down in his deposition that he was arrested. Then he turned around and put down the wrong time, which was 9 p.m. in Nassau County, in Long Island out here. Here's the headbanger. Subsection 238-2B of the Vehicle Traffic Law, the same book I read here tonight, shows you that if there's anything that's illegible or misdescribed, it's an automatic dismissal. How many of us know this? That these officers are constantly putting down false and fraudulent conveyance of language in these tickets, and because we don't know the language, we don't come to class, we don't learn, we wind up getting burned. If Cat Williams would have learned this knowledge, if he would have known this, he would have saved his money and all these attorney fees. So they may make the big change. Yeah, but you're still getting hit. I read yesterday's paper. I don't even read the paper. The ancestors led me to the paper. Who back in jail again? Flavor Flav. He back in jail again.
Yeah, Walsh.
You know, brother? So it's a shame. And as you stated, Noble, these are the celebrities who are influencing our community and misleading us the wrong way, and we're wondering why we're having so much problems in our community. But none of these entertainers, brother, do what Oprah do, and I'm not giving her the credit, but I'm only speaking about the fact that she had set up a girls' school in South Africa. But if all these entertainers can come together with their monies, brother, we can be having houses, farmland, car dealerships, department stores, with the money that I entertain, we can create the employment for ourselves, because the entertainment world that we are so heavily in is in the billions and billions of dollars, but not one iota of that money is doing any progress for us as a people, which,
yeah.
you know, which you can see, brother. All right? But yet, somewhere along the line, brother, we deaf, dumb, and blind because we don't see it as a people. So, you know, so to me personally, brother, and even before I even became conscious, brother, as a Moor, I remember over 27 years ago, looking at these celebrities, I always had a thought about why they can't pull their money together. You know, like, for instance, like when Michael Jordan was on the basketball scene, I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. Why our brothers and sisters are buying $200 pair of sneakers when Jordan can get a factory set up where you can give brothers and sisters jobs making the sneakers? You're buying the sneakers, and he's getting the proceeds, but at the same time, he's not giving back to the community by opening up factories to give our brothers and sisters jobs. Who's wearing these sneakers? So where is money coming from? Our parents, who's working hard to slave to give you $200 to buy $200 of Jordan sneakers. You know, so we're concerned about putting money in Jordan's pocket, but Jordan's not concerned about putting money in our pocket. So, brother, you know, I just thank the ancestors that I had a level of consciousness over 27 years ago to realize that I wasn't really fascinated with these brothers knowing the position they were in, because I know they can help us. I know they can help us, but, you know, again, as you stated, brother, it's that level of consciousness, you know, it's that level. And right now, in these days and time, brother, the consciousness now is global. It's not about a United States issue. It's global, you know, and a lot of us don't realize this is a global issue. And how you know this is true, because earlier I was listening to you when you were speaking about Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. And one of the debates, if anybody was paying attention, was Barack Obama went there on Mitt Romney by stating to him where he spent his money or invested his money in a foreign country. Mitt Romney came back and said, wait a minute, let's talk about youth investing your money in a foreign country. So what they're doing is throwing dirt on each other about money's in a foreign country. All right? So now when you hear that, I said, well, wait a minute. And then when you hear Warren Buffett and all the other billionaires pulling their money out of the American stock market, all right, going to other foreign countries, and then you hear the president and you hear Mitt Romney, who's running as one of the contenders for the position, what is that telling you? You know? But the question is, Noble, is our people conscious enough to catch that? Are we preparing ourselves so that way when this thing hits that we can sustain? You know, that's the question. That is the question. That's my worldview, my global worldview for this night's program. You know, are we prepared to create some kind of economic stability for ourselves? Because I'm working on a project, brother, right now. I'm dealing with a sovereign bank. It's called the Bank of Mikamui, which is called IBOM. Sovereign Bank. If anybody get a chance, go to YouTube and type in Coconut Revolution, where these brothers, these Moors, had fought the Germans and the British with inferior weapons and beat them. But you know what the Europeans
yep.
did? Because they knew that they couldn't beat these Moors on this island, they joined them economically.
That was an excellent documentary, the Coconut Wars.
Yes. Yes, brother. You know, so I have an account over there, brother. You know, the question is, how many of us have an account, you know, in a place like that? And they don't deal with no fractional reserve or Federal Reserve. They're a sovereign bank. You know what I'm saying? Very difficult to get in there, but I can show you how to get up in there. It's not easy. But I've been working on it, brother, because I love my people. I love my people. I love you out there. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to continue to do the work for our financial freedom, because I got no time to be bickering and fighting and battling this one and that one, because guess what? When your babies need food on the table, brother, that's hardcore, knowing that you're in a certain situation and you can't feed your babies. You may can go without food for a day or two, but you can't see your babies not going out without food. That's hardcore right there. And them Chinese and them Koreans and them Japanese, they're going to make sure their babies eat, because they got some economic stability going on.
Yep.
So I really appreciate your brothers having me on the air tonight. I really appreciate y'all.
Well, no doubt, brother. Like I said, you know, I've known for a while that you have definitely been qualified, you know what I'm saying, with the information that you've been dispensing to the family. You know, you just on Tuesday night, so we on Tuesday as well. And I always like, you know, when a day comes available and the slot becomes open, we need to bring you through so we can introduce you to the family. So here we
Definitely.
Are. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And I also wanted you, you know, because you're speaking about the fact that Mitt Romney and Barack Obama was talking about foreign investments and things of that nature. And we have had people make mention, I think the brother Gabriel L., he came through the program before, and he explained to people what exactly was going on with Mitt Romney in regards to him hiding his assets, you know, in offshores and the fact that he has a trust and everything. Can you expound upon that? Because that's been in the headlines as of lately, too. A lot of people have been talking about how the quote-unquote rich remain wealthy, you know what I'm saying, and how they keep their assets out of the purview and the eye of the public. Can you speak on that?
Well, I haven't been studying Mitt Romney enough to really elaborate, but I am familiar with the fact of the offshore investments and trusts being in foreign locations. There is an act out called FATCA. It deals with the Foreign Account Compliance Tax Act. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's called FATCA, all right? And what that's all about is interesting that you brought that up, is because the powers that be is well aware that a lot of the quote-unquote U.S. citizens is putting their monies offshore and abroad just to maintain some type of economic stability for themselves and their family whenever this economic catastrophe hit, all right? But, of course, you know, the IRS, you know, and their commissions are well aware that there are a lot of U.S. citizens, as they would say, structuring themselves and securing themselves offshore, all right? This offshore has not been something that just happened up to date, but this has been going on for many, many years. Frank Lucas, if we all remember him from The American Gangster, had an offshore account, and I thought that he was a foolish man to even let some people know that, because they didn't know that he had an offshore, because they wasn't even technologically inclined to even find that out. And, you know, and he had about 300-something thousand, or maybe more, in the offshore account, but he feared that they was going to find this out to a point where he gave that information up. All right, so you know, when you're having your funds in a foreign country like that, like Mitt Romney, it's going to be very difficult. All right, but one thing that I want to say to those out there, that when you do start establishing an offshore account, make sure that you don't use no U.S. dollars in doing that. And the only reason why I'm saying that, because I remember so many years ago up in Connecticut, I went to a grant program, and in that grant program, what occurred was that this particular gentleman who was given the program put millions of dollars in grant money in a Swiss account, and the U.S. was going after this guy and went to the Swiss bank and began to start learning from the Swiss bank that there were some accounts there that they was trying to capture, and the Swiss government refused to give that information up. So it was a situation where the U.S. had pulled a political move, and what they did was to catch those who had their money in the Swiss. They pulled all U.S. dollars out of that Swiss account, which, of course, the Swiss had no jurisdiction over U.S. currency, all right? And this is how they captured all those who had those accounts, and they was arrested for that, all right? So I just want to make sure that those who do have an offshore account, you know, use foreign currency. You know what I'm saying? You know, as far as silver or gold or even the euros, use foreign currency to open up your foreign account. Do not use any Federal Reserve notes, because if you use any forms of Federal Reserve notes, of course, the Federal Reserve notes is instruments of sanctions. All right? And I recall, I don't know anybody out there who is aware of this, when Farrakhan did his friendship tour, all right, and when he went to Libya, this is before they had murdered Gaddafi, when he came back, it was a situation where the Congress was summoning the brother to the floor and wanted to find out from him, did he spend any U.S. currency on Libyan soil because of the fact of the embargoes and the sanctions against Libya. And, of course, you know, Farrakhan hit them with the correct answer. You know what I'm saying? So, again, like I stated, brother, I'm not too familiar with Mitt Romney. I would have to sit down and study him and find out what's going on with him. But he's not doing anything different than any of the rest of them, you know, because if you notice, a lot of the U.S. companies are in foreign countries. You know, like, for instance, I read an article in the Financial Times where McDonald's is in India. Now, listen to this headbanger. McDonald's is in India. And can you believe that McDonald's is selling vegetarian, or I should say vegan foods to the Indians in India? That's the only McDonald's that's selling vegan foods?
Yeah, because they can't sell beef.
But that's my point. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that we have a lot of health consciousness going on in America, which you're already aware of. And you would think that McDonald's would open up a vegan restaurant just to accommodate the vegans over here. You know what I'm saying? You know,
mm-hmm.
because we got more vegans consciousness in this country. You know, but again, in India, they do eat meat. It may not be beef, you know. But again, it just shows you, you know, where it's at when it comes to us, because they want to make sure they feed us the poison, but yet they can give vegan foods to the Indians in India, you know?
And they, yep.
So that's the level of consciousness that we need to have, so that way our people will be aware of what's going on, because we as a people, we are conscious to a certain level, but the problem is with our consciousness, is we're not bringing the consciousness in as a collective. You know, our consciousness is in diversity, unfortunately, but we should have, which is nothing wrong with that, what we should have is continuity with our diversified consciousness, because we do have consciousness in different parts of our community and our neighborhood, but we need to bring it together. You know, Noble?
Definitely. Definitely. There is untold amounts of power that await us if we were to combine the different organizations, the different resources that the organizations possess, which is, you know, their members, because the members, in my humble opinion, are the ones who have the skills and talents needed to continue to build and, you know, move forward. So There's a lot of effort that has been taking place to accomplish these things, but like you said, Noble, it's going to take a lot more work for us to realize that, you know, as long as we stay divided, as long as you have the Moors, different Moorish groups that are completely split down the middle, that will, you know, they refuse to sit down at the table and share information and to correct information and to, you know, just move as one unit. And you know, this is just the Moors, but the other organizations who find all kind of reasons not to get together with their brothers because they may have either differences in opinions or slight differences in their scholarship, you know, we are ultimately going to be defeating ourselves. Because one thing that I did notice, and even though the brothers in the entertainment industry are moving with a message that is not updated, it's almost like they're stuck in the 90s or something, or they're stuck in the late 80s, because the information that they're bringing in their music and things of that nature is not it's not in line with the times that we are living in. You know what I mean? It's almost as if they're speaking of a time and an era that doesn't even exist. But one thing that I did notice with some of them is that when they do choose to move together as a unit, when they come together, you know, because they might come together and just talk about profane things. They might come together and just talk about some misogyny. But nevertheless, when they do come together as a group, as a force, you see the power in that.
It's interesting that you said that, Noble. If you can go back in the 60s and 70s.
Yes, sir.
One thing I've noticed that you point out, when you go back in that time, you had brothers like Ray Charles, Stevie Wonder, and James Brown, you know, had a host of other entertainers that was actually conscious of the times, and you can tell because listening to their music, you can tell what they was protesting within the music during that time.
Yes.
And so it's just interesting that you brought that out because I've noticed the same thing. Because I used to be a DJ back in the days, you know, and this is like back in the 70s. I used to spin the wheels, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, so you're familiar.
Very familiar, brother, you know what I'm saying? And I'm out of the loop. I'm not even into it like I used to because I'm so much into this law and finance. You know, there's a time, brother, I could have told you, you know, when the bridge came, the name of the record label, you know, the group, when they started. I mean, I was that so fanatically into it to a point where, you know, right now you ask me a question, I couldn't even tell you. You know what I'm saying? But that just shows you that the level of consciousness that I had at that particular time when I heard brothers like again, James Brown, Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, where you can just hear them display in their music what was going on, you know, in reference to our community and how we were being oppressed, you could just hear it, you know what I'm saying? And it's just so sad that the brothers today who are quote-unquote entertainers, they will sample old school music. But I'm saying, but how come you're not sampling the consciousness that the old school music has for you to transcend in these days and time? If you notice, they would sample the old school music. You would listen to it, you know, like my wife. You know, this time she had played something, and when I hear that, that's a remix. You know, because I used to be a DJ, so I recognize it. So as soon as I hear it, I didn't lose it because you know you don't forget. You know, like riding a bike, you don't forget. You know, you might have ride a bike up to 10 years old, and then the next 20 years you don't ride a bike, but you get on it, you ain't going to forget how to ride the bike. You know what I'm saying? So when I do hear it, I recognize it. But it's just interesting that they can sample the old school music, but you didn't pick up the level of consciousness. So they didn't hear the consciousness that was in that music. They just wanted to just to get the tune. But the tune went along with the verbiage. You know,
yes,
the tune was the vibe or the energy that went on at the time for them to produce the tune. So that just shows you that they are so out of sync today that they don't realize the consciousness that the tune had. As soon as you heard the tune, like for me and you, if we hear the tune, we already know what we can relate that to. They can't even relate that to any form of consciousness back then that what was going on based upon our liberation as a people.
Yeah, it's ugly. Very ugly. You know what I'm saying? I did a clip recently with a brother by the name of Brother Rich. Shout out to Brother Rich in the Underground Railroad. And we were in the streets of Brooklyn, downtown Brooklyn, talking about the history of the music industry, just to add on to what you were saying, brother. And I was speaking on the infiltration of our soul music that took place I believe it was in the 50s by the one who spearheaded that campaign was Clive Davis. And Clive Davis received a report by Harvard University did a very detailed and intricate report on how to invade and how to penetrate soul music, quote unquote black music. And after He was the president. Clive Davis was the president of CBS Records. And then after that, after that report was released, then you begin to see the infiltration of the major corporations into, you know, basically going up against the Motowns of the world, Stack Records and things of that nature. And they folded them. And what they began doing is signing up the producers to, you know, to the songwriters. At first, they signed up the songwriters at first, and once they got the songwriters, it's very easy to get the artists. So they began to get the artists. The music in the beginning was still, you know, revolutionary, and it was still filled with soul. It was still about the people that still had a message in it, but it showed the process of it slowly becoming diluted, slowly becoming compromised,
yes,
to the point where it fell to disco. And then from there, they basically just did away with what we, you know now as that classic R&B sound, you know what I'm saying? And henceforth, you know, you got Chris Brown as like the hottest R&B dude now, you know what I mean? Like, you know, Miguel and people like that. You know what I'm saying? But it is a result of a top-down, from a corporate standpoint, from a top-down aspect of them attacking our music and things of that nature. So these $100 million, $500 million slaves that are contracted for a brother like you that is very well, you know, very well learned in contract law and things of that nature, all of these artists that are signed to labels, right, are contracted. So
true.
I don't think the family understands that there are things that they are contractually obligated to that they can't even do. There are certain
true.
Things in their contract that they can't even say. They won't tell
true.
You because it's in the contract. They have gag orders against
that's
them
true.
To even come out and say certain things.
That's true.
Okay? So these artists can say derogatory things about women. They could say derogatory things about the race that they belong to. They could say derogatory, and they could speak about murdering the next man, but they can't talk about quote unquote Jews. They can't speak about political, sociopolitical issues if they're not deemed to be an artist in that category. Like if they were quote unquote a gangster rapper. They can't speak about socio-political things because they won't get supported by the label. They'll get pressure from the label, and it'll get as bad to the point where if the label decides to cut them from the label, that it's in the contract that they can do that. You know what I'm saying? So it's and then when we talk about the finances that these artists are receiving, what a lot of people don't know is a lot of these artists, through their financial investors, are investing in our downfall. Like, they're owning stocks in the prison industry. They're owning stocks in all kinds of things. They're investing in war machines. They're investing in Israel. And some of this is without, they're investing in these shell companies that they don't even know about. They don't do the research, so they don't even have any idea about where their money is being invested in because they just put it in the hands of the financial advisors. But it's being utilized to bankroll their destruction.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you said that, Noble, because me and another Moore was working on the QSUP number. And say, for instance, if you have a criminal case, because I can confirm something for you. Say, for instance, if you have a criminal case, we can take
yes.
that index number of that criminal case, and we can have that case dismissed. Why? Because, first of all, the judge who's actually presiding over that case, when you do the QSUP number, you will find the judge's name and the fund that his name is next to, all right,
yes.
with the index number showing that he has a pecuniary interest in that case. So it's just interesting that you're saying that because this is exactly the demonstration that we are talking about, all right, in the liberation of our people. But one thing that I have to say, too, brother, that, you know, having this information, most people would say, you know, we would like to utilize that information, but listen, there's moral turpitude that goes along with this knowledge.
Because one thing that I've noticed, Noble, that once we let this level of knowledge be put out there, you know, one of the problems we have is that we're not living up to be nobles and noblists. You know what I'm saying? Mm. We can't afford to take knowledge and information that's going to liberate us, and then we turn around and display some behavior that would prejudice our position. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's something that we really have to strongly look at. You know, like, for instance, you know, me and another more, you know, we you know, it's sad to say, and it's embarrassing to say, you know, that we have to be selective with the information who we share it with, because we got brothers and sisters out there who just is criminal-minded. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, they are.
And we're suffering. So mm-hmm. And so the level of information that you put it out there, brother, I know exactly what you're talking about, all right, on how these industries are investing in into the penal system, making penal profits off our brothers and sisters, because they don't seem to realize that United States Constitution is nothing but a contract, all right, a contract where they're going to develop some form of economics off the lives of our people, and we don't see that, all right? So you brought out a very interesting point, brother, a very interesting point, and again, you know, more, like I said, you know, I'm really honored to be on the air with you, you know, just to share my thoughts and worldview about what's going on, you know, and this level of consciousness, because we have to have a global consciousness. We can't just be stuck in the United States.
Not at all.
We can't be stuck here.
Not at all.
And let me put this out there too, brother, because this is something that needs to be spoken on, you know, because this is a fact that would disturb me, that when you see Africans come over here, you know, this is how I know something is wrong, because when they do come over here, they don't even acknowledge us. You know, they don't even say, you know, well, and we're not even talking about a situation or a scenario where we just say, well, the slave trade never happened, all right? Or, you know, or they enslaved us just over here. It's just the fact that you'll see an African and you can identify with them, and they can identify with you. And I'm just only talking about in the physiological look of the
mm-hmm.
parent, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, when they come over here, it's like they don't even know you. You know, I remember running into an African woman one day, and she was asking me some questions, and then I started asking her, you know, what part of the continent. I didn't say where she's from and where you're at and, you know, where you know. So, you know, I'm asking her, what part of the continent that you're from? So that way I learn, you know what I'm saying, from you.
Yeah.
And then she said, where are you from? I said, what do you mean where I'm from? You don't see that my nose is your nose, my hair is your ear, my skin is your skin, you don't recognize me? You know what I'm saying? You know, that's one of the saddest things. You know, other ethnic groups of people, you know,
yeah.
Chinese have been here during this quote-unquote slave trade, but Chinese from abroad in these days in five come, they see them, and what happens? They get together. They don't just about themselves to say, oh, you know, we don't recognize you. You know, they can see
mm-hmm.
who they are, and they can see how they can economically get together and work together. They can see that. You know,
yes,
there's a connection with the Chinese here, with the Chinese in China, but there's no connection with us, with the so-called African. You feel
and
Chinese?
That always,
no,
yeah, that always startled me. Simply because we had what is known as a Pan-African movement. And brothers like Malcolm and other brothers in the 60s were very visual in their protest and their love for the continent, even in the 20s. Okay?
Sure.
So I never understood why our contemporaries or our peers never really made that connection with our brothers in Africa. And I know on the goal sheet, I read the goal sheet, that was part of the goal, like to connect with the brothers who had the resources on the motherland, or just let them know that we're here. Like, so when you come over here, you don't disrespect us and just keep it moving and walk past us like Like, we didn't tear the doors down for you to come over here, because I remind people, like, there wasn't no Jamaicans, there wasn't no Africans, there wasn't no quote-unquote East Indians over here before the 60s.
That's true. That's true, brother.
They wasn't.
That's true.
And if they were over here, it was very limited few. I'm talking about they weren't
true.
Part of, they were not here in the millions.
True. That's very true. That's very true. You're right. And how I know what you're saying is true, brother, because my uncle, I remember back in the 70s, my mom's brought us down to go see our grandmother, all right? And,
yeah.
Of course, you know, we have Uncle Junior. And it's interesting that you said that, Noble, because being up in the Bronx, you know, in that area that I grew up in, you know, we out there playing football. You know how you throw the football from sewer to sewer. You know how we play out in the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, I grew up with, you know, mostly, you know, the Puerto Rican brothers. You know what I'm saying? And, of course, they're our brothers. So we out there playing football, and they got
mm-hmm.
finessed and throwing the ball and running and everything. Like, you know, because, you know, they're our brothers. So when I'm down south, this is in the 70s, I'll never forget this. So, I'm, you know, my uncle asked me, because, you know, football down there is a big thing. So
so
my uncle said, oh, you can play football? I said, yeah, uncle, that's my thing. I love football. All right? So I'd be, you know, back up north, we'd be playing with Puerto Ricans. You know, saying they can play. He said to me, Puerto Rican? What does Puerto Rican know about a football?
Mm-hmm.
So that should show you the level of consciousness that he didn't have. Because he was
Noble.
Came up north.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I just wanted to say that they were not even familiar with Puerto Ricans down south in the 80s.
True. True.
They weren't. I'm so sincere. Like, even recently, you know, because you got Jennifer Lopez and other quote-unquote Puerto Ricans that have garnered international fame, their household names. So now the Puerto Rican, quote-unquote, is people are familiar with them. But when I was in Atlanta in the 90s, in the late 90s, they thought the Puerto Ricans were Mexicans. They were not familiar with Puerto Ricans. You know what I'm saying?
What?
They weren't. And, you know, it's very interesting. You know what I'm saying? It's very interesting. I've heard a lot of stories about what they told our brothers and sisters that are coming from the continent about us over here. And in regards to the communication that they should be having with us, you know, I've also heard other stories about some of the affiliations that some of the, not the brothers and sisters that have come over here recently, but the first wave of immigrants that came into the United States in the late 60s, the 70s, or the late 70s rather, in the 80s and whatnot, that a lot of, that some of these people were working with some of the Americans, not the Americans, the U.S.A., the corporate entities that were in their countries destabilizing or doing other things, and promised them that if you work with us and you help us out, that we have neighborhoods over in America that you can move to. And these people willingly helped out the Americans, and as a reward, they were granted visas and other things of that nature to come into the state. The same way that you have Iraqis coming out of Iraq during the whole conflict that was taking place over the last decade, and many of them were, quote-unquote, on the side of, you know, the occupiers. But because of what they were doing by providing information and other things, they were allowed to come to America as a safe haven.
Right.
You know, it's interesting that you said that. This is a term that we can look at when we get a chance. It's the term surplus people. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but that's exactly what it is. Because what I was learning, brother, was that why that was going on, because I study immigration laws, all right? The Social
yes, sir.
Security system is so hardcore hit. Because I remember reading something by Alan Greenspan. He wrote a book, and he was talking to Ronald Reagan when Reagan was in office, and that was one of the issues they brought up was Social Security. And one thing that Ronald Reagan himself said, that to talk about Social Security is America's third rail. all right? And
mm-hmm.
that's something that they always talk about or put up in the election time because they want to see, you know, how this is going to be handled, all right? Again, because of the Social Security has been hit so hard because of the monies that have been removed out there for the war chest, how do you put those monies back in? Oh, well, what happens is this. Through immigration laws, what we're going to do is we're going to allow a whole wave of immigrants to come here and migrate, and guess what we're going to do? We're going to give them Social Security numbers. So they can
yep.
pay into the system to fill in the gap from the monies that's been taken out from the people we use for the war. All right, so it's just interesting that you brought that up, and then you have to look up the term surplus people because they need a surplus of people in order to offset any debts that was created by these guru economic monsters, you know, because that's basically
yeah.
what they are, guru economic monsters, you know, that would cause economic catastrophe, you know?
Yep, definitely. Definitely. Now, you're right and exact with that, brother.
You know
a lot of brothers and sisters in New York are familiar with the destabilization that took place in the 80s when our Caribbean brothers and sisters came into the flood of them, the Haitians and the Jamaicans primarily, when they came into the workforce, more specifically the hospital workforce, like RN, registered nurses,
yes.
things of that
you.
Nature.
That's true.
You know, there was, and also there were like wars that took place. And what happened is a lot of them basically took pay cuts. They agreed to take the pay cuts in order to get the positions. And a lot of our people were basically, you know, moved. We were pushed out of jobs.
You
know what I'm saying?
It's,
so,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
It's,
go
it's
ahead.
Just, excuse me number four, interrupting your flow, but. It's interesting that you said that because we must address that. We must address that because one thing that our Caribbean brothers and sisters don't seem to recognize, and brother, I love you for bringing that topic up because this is going to be some hardcore stuff I'm about to drop.
Indeed.
The thing that got me is this, is that when that pay cut took place, a lot of our brothers and sisters from the Caribbean don't seem to realize that our brothers and sisters had formed unions and
unions.
For us to
mm-hmm.
do something decent, all right,
yes.
to get something decent. And the brothers and sisters from the Caribbean didn't understand that, all right? And how we can tell they didn't understand that, all right, is because let's go back to Marcus Garvey. This is why I tell a brother from Jamaica, all right, who talks foolishness, all right, where I say, well, listen, if you're not coming over here with the ideology of Marcus Garvey, you're not really looking for network and help because Garvey was the protege of economic empowerment.
Yes.
He was the man. So a lot of the Jamaicans who came here, they didn't have the attitude of Marcus Garvey. And matter of fact, a lot of them rejected him over there, but then they started accepting him, but they didn't accept him in the masses. That's why I always say, brother, that if Jamaica was moving on the principles of Marcus Garvey,
Garvey.
She would be on the map to this day.
Well,
she'd be on the
it's interesting. Yes, and that's interesting that you brought that up. I want you to continue the bill, but I just wanted to add on that I was doing research on the Rastafarian, the Nyabingi, and the Rastafarian movement, and the principles of the Rastafarian movement in the 50s and whatnot, in the 40s, how they merged the whole, it was a Judeo-Christian movement, but a Judeo-Christian movement from the aspects of the Christian was Coptic, Ethiopian Coptic, and the Judaic aspect was a Sephardic Jewish aspect. So they were fusing our brothers and sisters, the quote-unquote black Christ, right, and the quote-unquote black Jew or the Sephardic Jew or the Moorish Jew, and bringing those principles together, and they were putting Marcus Garvey right in the middle of all of that.
True.
So the Rastafarian, who was under the gun in Jamaica, okay, and then you could get into the whole political aspect with Siega and Manley and whatnot, and you could also talk about the Jamaicans that they let over here after Siega got into power in the 80s and whatnot with the whole coke rush. Because remember, the rosters that they sent to destabilize the drug market, that's a whole other conversation, but the rosters that they sent to destabilize the drug market were the JLP or JPL soldiers who were basically the political gangs that were working for Siega, who was a well-known CIA operative.
True.
You know what I'm saying? So the brothers were being supplied. It's almost like the whole Rick Ross, Freeway Ricky Ross thing that you
true.
See in L.A.,
true.
Where he was being provided the cocaine to destabilize the West Coast on that point, but a lot of the brothers that got sent into the Americas to destabilize the markets in America were sent from the CIA via Siega and them through the political parties. These were political, not political party, political gangs. Like, you know, for the family that's not aware, picture the Bloods and the Crips banging for the Democrats and the Republicans. Like around this time of election season, they would be going hard, like drive-bys and everything, talking about Mitt Romney, ho, and like, you know, going in. But that, and then we also have to put in the whole aspect of the Roman Catholicism that you know, has blanketed that island, the mentality of the whole Roman Catholic aspect of it. So Garvey was fought against by his own people in Jamaica when he got deported, and when he came back, his whole ideology has been fought against by the people on that island. But the brothers who kept that in their hearts and kept it as a part of their movement and still standing strong to this day are the Rastafarians that in Jamaica. And that's a worldwide movement. It's not just relegated to Jamaica, but they have humongous aspects of Marcus Garvey inside of their doctrine.
That's true. That's very true.
You know,
what you're saying, though.
And like you were saying, that the brothers that come out of Jamaica are so powerful, you know what I'm saying? Just as spirits, like their spirits are so powerful that, like you said, if they came into the Americas with that mentality that Garvey had about building up to do for self, not only would Jamaica not be going through what it's going through right now with the poverty and the suffering, but the world would be able to benefit. We would be able to rise up. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of clashes took place. It took a lot of decades for a lot of drama that took place because of the flood of Jamaicans that came into the Americas. That caused wars. Like, I don't know, like, a lot of people lost their lives as a result of that. Huh?
Like the Jamaican Party, that's true.
No, I'm saying it caused a lot. But there were a lot of physical wars. There are a lot of lives that were lost as a result of, you know, the mentalities. They came with a different kind of mentality, and it was contrary to what a lot of people in the Americas were moving with. You know what I'm saying?
True.
We were actually destabilized.
You keep saying America. You're talking about the continental United States. I mean, it's all the Americas
when
you talk about. Yeah.
Okay. Pardon me for the misquotes. I meant the USA. But we're really just sitting here tracing back, you know what I'm saying? We're at the crime scene trying to trace back when the destabilization took place, and a lot of destabilization took place when like the brother Kometa, you said, when they opened up the floodgates with the surplus. You know what I'm saying? And we had a lot of people that looked like us but did not think like us.
True.
And
exactly.
A lot of jobs were lost. A lot of jobs were actually taken. It's similar to what you see in the activities of the quote-unquote Mexican when he came into the market, and he said, well, shit, all right, they clean the bathrooms for $5 an hour. Okay, shit, give me three. And it was nothing more to talk about. You know what I'm saying? It was nothing more to talk about. So if you could understand that concept, family, then you could understand the concept that took place in the late 70s and the 80s when our brothers and sisters from the continent and the Caribbeans came into the Americas and came into North America specifically and whatnot. But, yeah, bro.
I have to add on to what you're saying, too, brother, because me growing up in the Bronx region, because you brought something back to my attention when I was making mention of the Jamaican Posse, because if anybody remember going back in the, like, the 80s, if you've been in that area, all right, all that whole area from 241st Street, which they call the Wakefield section of the Bronx, going all the way down to Dunhill Road, was all run by the Italians, all right?
Yes.
But, of course, there were some drug deals made. Of course, treaties was made, you know what I'm saying, with the Jamaican Posse in reference to the Caribbean brothers opening up businesses. And that's what you see right now from 241st Street in the Bronx, White Plains Road, all the way down to Dunhill Road. All that is Little Jamaica.
Yeah, all of that. And I come from Flatbush in the territories of Brooklyn. So we witnessed in 80, 81, 82, 83, the brothers and sisters, the quote-unquote brothers and sisters who were descended from the South, the Southern families, those brothers, you know, were basically, they were murdered. I'm going to just keep it 1,000. Like, I'm just put it out like it is. They were wiped off. They were wiped out by the Jamaicans who came in and took over those markets. You know what I'm saying? And it destabilized a lot of things. And this is where you see really throughout that decade, that's when the whole gun violence thing really began to kick off, really began to pick off. The fighting stopped and it turned into an all-out war, urban war.
True.
You know what I'm saying? And a lot of brothers and sisters, but a lot of brothers lost their lives, and especially brothers on this side, as a result of it was a flood and they wasn't properly prepared for it. I don't think they saw it coming.
Yeah, you're right. It was an attack. It was a COINTELPRO attack, brother. Again, back to the Dictionary of Finance Investment Terms. I just want to read a term that relates to surplus people based upon what we are elaborating on. And when you go to page 698, stimulus plan, federal government program designed to counteract weak economic activity. This is what they're claiming. With stimulus in form of government spending on infrastructure and other initiatives, tax breaks, and subsidiaries, central banks stimulate the economy with loose monetary policies, which drive down interest rates to encourage businesses and consumers to borrow and spend. In the late 2000s, governments around the world, if you hear that, governments around the world, we have to be globally conscious, but it says here, governments around the world enacted aggressive fiscal and monetary stimulus plans to counteract the recession and financial crisis. And this is what they say. See also American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. And you see how they mentioned the global economy that was involved? So that shows you see what I'm saying, brother? You know, and again, this is critical. What we're talking about tonight, brother, is critical.
Indeed. It is very critical. You know what I mean? It is very critical. Like I said, I'm honored that you are bringing this information forth. You know what I'm saying? I'm glad that the audience has finally had the chance to meet you. You know what I'm saying? And you're part of the university now. You know what I mean? So what we're going to do, it is around 11:04 right now. At 11:11, we do a meditation.
Yeah.
Where we play the Om Pad Me Om for about 4 minutes. And then when we return, what we're going to do is open up the phone lines because we do have hands up. And I'm sure that the family wants to build with you and they may have some questions to ask. So before we get into the 11:11 hour, can you share information with the listening audience if they want to get in touch with you or if they want to receive any of your information, any of your intellectual property, such as the videos that you may have produced or books, et cetera?
Yes. It's interesting that you stated that. DVDs I do have. They're being produced because I know there's those out there in different states looking for my DVDs. And, again, I would have to apologize for those who are listening because it's just a situation where I'm so backed up with work that people have put in the order and I am late by sending those DVDs out. But you will get them, that's definite. And I will most likely would put extra DVDs that you didn't request in that, you know, just to show you my gratitude in reference to your support. Because, you know, it's just the work for me is overwhelming. I'm by myself practically. We were supposed to be running Harlem Rising Radio. Couldn't run that. That was, but of course, Brother Abiko down in Louisiana. So it was very, very difficult to keep that going because, brother, I have so much on my plate. I'm in and out these courts. I'm putting together pleadings. I'm teaching classes. So it's like, I'm, like, wearing so many hats that I can't just keep up, and it's just too much. And, of course, you know, and then my own personal life, you know, battling, you know, family matters, which everybody can comprehend where I'm coming from. But
yes,
I'm working on, of course, some material also to be available because one thing I noticed, I read a lot of Moorish material out there, all right? And there's certain issues that's just not being touched on that I noticed that I see. So I'm going to put that type of material out, and, of course, that takes time. I'm going to make that also available. But there are DVDs that's being, of course, being mass-produced. I have somebody finally who's there for me to be able to run them off for me. Of course, I have to look at those DVDs and make sure they're edited properly and, of course, the cover. And because we want to package it, you know, because we don't want to give an inferior product or package to our brothers and sisters, because my attitude is that how come every time when it comes to us, we don't seem to have a beautiful package when it comes to pushing out our product? You know, it's always something that looks winky-dink. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, I totally agree.
It should look professional. So that takes
time.
I
totally agree.
Resource, you know, and it costs, you know what I'm saying? So I do have those DVDs as well be available. Of course, my telephone number for those who want to reach me, 347-626-1357. I say it again, 347-626-1357. Of course, my email, F, like in Frank, U, like in Universe, R, like in Red, D, like in David, E, like in Eric, M, like in Mary, U, like in Universe, I, like in ID, R, like in Red, at yahoo.com. That's Field Demure. It's French for the Moors. That's what that is. All right. You can reach me at that email. Of course, you can even reach me by text, you know, so we can communicate. Of course, every Tuesday between 6:30 and 9:30 at the National Black Theater. Of course, we have classes there, and of course, we talk about law and equity. And what I come out with is remedies and solutions. And we're talking about something that is concrete. We're not talking about giving you some affidavit or some writ and just saying, hey, go test the waters. No, you know, what I actually do, so you know what's going on, I go into those courtrooms, I sit down with them federal judges, I sit down with them state judges. All right, and I analyze the system. I analyze these attorneys, and I see what they're looking for, and restructure whatever it is,
right?
So that way we can get some results. All right, so that's basically what it's about. You know, reading the statutes, yeah. Reading the case laws. You know, you can come out and you can learn. All right, again, this information in reference to this frisk and stop. All right, because that's the big thing that's going on. And come to find out, it's not a law. All right, it was some manual memo that was put together by some chief of police who's teaching new recruits on how to frisk you, all right? And one thing I learned, but what he stated today in federal court is that
frisking. It's like really passing the hand over your pockets or whatever,
right?
Just to see if you have anything that's on you,
brother.
But these police officers are doing is they're using right. the stop and frisk as a means to say I'm going into your pocket, and they're calling that stop and frisk, but that's really a search,
right.
an illegal search and seizure.
Hold that thought for 1 second, brother. We're going to take our break for our 11-11 meditation. I want to actually expound on that thought when we come back. Family, if you know the routine, please comply. Find yourself in a dark place, preferably pitch black. You know, you could turn your screen monitor off without actually cutting your computer off. Find yourself seated straight, feet flat to the floor, with your palms on the edge of your knees, palms facing upwards, index fingers touching, thumbs touching, forming a pyramid, locking the tip of your tongue to the roof of your mouth, and pulling your air from your abdominals through the nose, out of the mouth, meditating to the sounds of Om Mani Padme Om, which stands for the jewel in the lotus, the perfect balance between masculine, feminine principle, family. Zone out. We shall see you on the other side. I lost sense of time. I was definitely in a wave of meditation. I said, give thanks.
Thanks.
All right. No doubt.
Peace.
So, you want to go to college?
I do. I want to expound upon the last question.
All right.
And it wasn't necessarily a question. He was talking about the procedure for stop and frisk. And what stop and frisk authorizes, like he said, is a general pack. But what they do instead is they tell people to empty their pockets. So let's take a marijuana possession, for example. If they do a pat and they're not able to necessarily identify what it is, they say, empty your pockets. So the person emptied their pockets. Now they're like, there it goes, in plain sight. You have marijuana in plain sight. You know what I'm saying? You're going down for that. So now they have about 500,000 melanated youth in the city of New York with these marijuana arrests on a jacket. You know?
Yeah.
That's further bonding them to the state. So, in essence, I think the Voice had threw an article out there where they pretty much spoke about the whole procedure and how it was felonious. You know?
True that, indeed.
So you saying that you actually saw this proceeding where they have the actual manual that gives the quote-unquote authority to do that?
Let me give you the articulation. As I was sitting there with one of my students in class, in this proceeding, the attorney who was representing the officers who violated this brother, because it was a situation where he went into a building
right.
to visit his sister, and the sister, I guess it seems quite apparent that when he finished visiting her, he left the building, and so of course the police then they jumped out on the brother, and they arrested him with this stop and frisk, and stated that he was trespassing. So he did state that his sister lives in the building, so therefore he couldn't be trespassing. But the interesting thing about this manual, this chief of police who's no longer with the department, he articulated information in reference to form UF 250. And the form has detailed information that an officer or a cadet, when they are on duty, have to fill out. And this is the form we're definitely going to have to subpoena, because this
right.
is where you can see where the officer didn't follow procedure. All right? Now, the interesting thing about what this chief of police was articulating was that he made it clear about what he was making mention about what the term is called vertical patrol. That's what the term they use, because I was listening to some of the terms, you know, that they use in the precinct among themselves. So that's something else that I want to definitely get involved with in putting a material together and pass out to our brothers and sisters community. So when a police officer approach you, use the police terms. So once you start using the police terms, you want to be vouchsafe, because they know that you know. And it's interesting because he specifically articulated vertical patrol. Now, what's vertical patrol, for those who are listening, is when a police officer enters into the building and he actually goes upstairs to, it could be a call based upon 311, 911, or some type of dispatch, or because of a complainant witness might have called in, and he's responding to the scene. As he goes upstairs or whatever floor that this alleged crime has been taking place, if you're in the area, as these police officers go up, which they call vertical patrol, you could be stopped and frisked at any given time, and it has nothing to do with you or associated with you, whatever that so-called crime was being committed at. So what I'm saying is that if the crime was committed, allegedly committed, on a particular floor, you can be on another floor, and if the officers see you on a floor that's not where the crime is committed, they can stop you and search you at any given time, because they call that vertical patrol. So, again, I'm going to put together some material. I'm going to have to order the minutes. I'm going to have to get it. I know it's going to cost me a substantial amount of money, but it's worth it, because it took them about 2 hours to actually articulate each exhibit that was presented to him based upon this UF-250 form that a police officer or a cadet who just came out of training would have to fill out. And, of course, the stop and frisk was an issue that they elaborated on. All right, and he did make a distinction between the search and seizure as opposed to the stop and frisk. And, of course, what I've noticed, which, of course, we are all aware in the community, that what the police officer does is that he's using the auspices of a stop and frisk, but at the same time, he's going to take that opportunity to put his hands in your pocket or to you to empty out your pocket, and that is not the procedure. But one thing that I want to say to you was that the plaintiff who's bringing the case cross-examined the officer and ask them specifically, where was there this stop and frisk? That's the Department of Policy. Was it put into any prior manuals in the training of ethics? And, of course, he, of course, stated that he doesn't recall, he don't remember, so the counsel has said to him, well, sir, well, we have to reveal back on Monday. But at any given time, when you review that manual again, please give us a call and let us know so that way that you remembered, all right? Because it was stated that the prior manuals do not have that stop and frisk. This is something that this specific officer inserted that departmental policy that was not really approved of. But this is what they've been pushing out as though it's some type of law, all right? So what I've noticed being in the courtroom in reference to this lawsuit is that the dismantling this manual, they're going to show you how this manual is incompetent and that it was constructed with no authority at all to implicate such departmental procedure in the community. So this is why this is so important, because the courtroom technically should be a pack. But who's there was nothing but attorneys. There's nothing but attorneys inside this courtroom. It's 15 feet on the 15th floor, 500 Pearl Street. It's right behind 60 Center Street. 60 Center Street is actually a state court building, which I thought is very interesting, because I don't think you see any other court building that's structured the way this building is all structured, because 60 Center Street is the state Supreme Court, and the federal court is behind the state Supreme Court, which is 500 Pearl Street. So the 15th floor, room 15C, at 9 a.m., Monday, is where they're going to finish conducting this deliberation on this stop and frisk. So for those who can make it, I have to put that information out there because I will be there.
Yeah. That's a story.
Yes. Yes.
Indeed.
So I have to be there, brother, because, again, I'm going to have to put it out there. I was also involved with a panel called Behind the Bench. It was a gentleman by the name of Cornelius Ricks, and
right.
He was conducting this thing where he wanted to put together what you call a Harlem Law Library. And it's interesting because I was telling him that I wanted to put together a Moorish Law Library for our community, so our brothers and sisters can have a public access to the library, because once those courts are closed after 5 o'clock, you will have no access to the law library, especially if you got a case going on in the next day and you need access, you can't get to it. So every third Thursday, they have a behind the bench forum, and I'm one of the panel speakers. And what I was annoyed at, brother, is that itself, Al Sharpton, and a whole host of brothers who are quote-unquote community activists is not even at this federal courthouse about to stop and frisk, but yet when you go in their forum, you hear them talking about it, but now here you are in a position where you can publicly go to this particular proceeding and get the information that's going to help our community. Matter of fact, another brother called me today, and I think it might have been yourself, Noble. I think it was you that brought it to my attention about something was going on in the Bronx concerning this matter, and I was stating that the attorneys in that case should go to the federal court and sit down and hear that proceeding, because that information in federal court can be parallel. It can help their case strongly to win in the Bronx case.
Yeah, I believe they're bringing a class action suit in the Bronx against the police for stop and frisk. It was a young brother, you know what I'm saying, and he was breaking it down, and he just brought the fire to them. And I seen it the other day, and I nodded my head, and I'm like, okay, people is finally, you know, they taking it to them. And I'm like, the more that this is challenged, you know, sooner or later, it's going to break, because it's not built on a sturdy foundation.
True.
Village Voice, they had already exposed that. They was like, look, this is how you beat it. And are people taking you know, the PBA to court? Are they going after people's numbers and what have you? Like, what type of paperwork are they putting together when they're approaching these particular affairs? So it'll be monumental to see you. You know, you the one that's bearing witness to the toppling of that particular, quote-unquote, you know, what they call in these particular lands a law that they're out there enforcing every night, putting more and more people on the quote-unquote slave rolls. So, you know, it's definitely recorded. That's why you're on the program tonight. Hopefully someone who needs to hear it can hear it, you know what I'm saying? And
true.
That's why means of communication always need to be open so we get in this information. We need to have you call open line. See, I don't even know if they don't got Kiss FM no more, so I came back to New York. What do they have for open line? Is that even on the radio anymore?
That's a good question, Walt. You know, that's sad to say, but, you know, I mean, again,
yeah.
Communication is the key, brother. And if we don't communicate with each other, you know, we're not going to be on the same page.
Indeed. And with that being said, I want to now interact with the audience because we have family out there with their hands up. So anyone in the audience that has any questions, comments, or concerns for the brother, please press 1 on your phone now. We will go to some hands that are already up in the call queue. All right? So let me go to caller from the 213-270-270 caller. Peace.
Peace.
Peace, Lord.
What's good with it?
That's the rabbi.
Peace to
yes,
the rabbi.
Sir. Yes, sir. I ain't a racist. Yo, listen.
Peace, Lord.
Very,
congratulations.
Peace
first and foremost, hold on. Let me give you your just due. All right? Ha ha.
Word up. Listen. Very good information tonight. The young people.
Anthem on the track.
Yeah.
Anthem, you a legend.
Yeah.
You said you was nice.
Younger.
Yeah.
Friend of me, life is my enemy. Art is the recipe. Come take a trip with me. Lubricate a mystery. Tell them how it feel to be mounted on my mystery. Scorpios and centipedes. Death is a friend of me. Life is my enemy. Art is the recipe. Come take a trip with me. Lubricate a mystery. Tell them how it feel to be mounted on a mystery. Scorpios and centipedes. Circle round the seventh.
Yes, sir.
See, commit to you. We got to get you out of retirement and get you spinning them discs again. We got young guns in the building bringing that Morris science to wax, you know what I'm saying, making it happen for a whole new generation. Shout out A.A. Rashid for that monumental Batman Mafia mixtape release. All right, family, it's in stores right now. Check that out. Digital stores, that is. My dude is on that piss. You got to sign
no
an
question.
Account. You got a contract with them in order to hear that.
Yeah, hell yeah.
You know.
Yo, listen, man, good information tonight. It's good information to let the young people know how they can minimize their interface with police because the police is thirsty, you know. They make the people think that crime went up. Crime ain't really go up. Crime, the kids got it good, but that whole weed culture that they get through the hip hop, they're not getting this concept that it's not about that stuff law. We got to get the kids the game. Like they got to learn how to not to interact with the pigs. You know what I'm saying? At all. You know, like that, real talk. So that's good that when they do interface, they got remedies and they feel, you know, a little bit more powerful and their stance. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, when you ain't doing nothing wrong, you ain't got nothing to worry about. But 9 times out of 10, when you is doing something quote-unquote wrong, you got to have a little bit more coof with you. You know what I'm saying? So we got to get them make this culture of flying saucers, you know, rise above the human shit and get them the game and make them sharp so they can appreciate reality from this Moorish standpoint of regalness. You know what I mean? So this is a powerful discussion. Right up.
No doubt. We do want to announce to the family that you will be back on the program very shortly doing the primer for your monumental upcoming lecture this November. Can you speak on that, please?
Oh, yeah. It's called How to Write Your Own Bible. And the reason why I took this undertaking is because I want to just get past the rhetoric of the religious discussion. I don't want to see another group of young people, young men and women, having to argue over the same, nonsense that we watched us do and then our elders do, trying to convince people about religion. I'm hip to the whole dynamic. It's like a watch. Religion and every form of fashion, any type of spiritual system that relies on you having a level of faith or honor for something above the physical is like a watch that everybody can wear. But it's one place that makes the watch, but different people buy their pieces from the watch from the same place, and all the watches work the same. I don't care if it's a Timex, a Rolex, a Seiko, a G-Shock. They all do the same thing. You know what I mean? They all do the same thing.
You know, brother, I like to pick a quick interjection on that. I don't know if you're familiar with a book called The Templars and the Assassin, The Militia of Heaven. James Westerman is the individual who wrote the book, and the most profound thing that he dropped, brother, that I think a lot of our brothers and sisters need to hear and see, and this needs to be perpetuated, is the fact that when the Prophet Muhammad was allegedly on the scene, because we don't know, because the man doesn't know by being told, but at the same time, this particular prophet was being put out there. But the thing that I want y'all to be aware of, which threw me back, is that when this prophet was supposed to have been, died at a particular year, there was this war of the caliphs. And when I started reading the material, what threw me to the floor was that you had Ali on one side, of course, Abu Bakr on the other side, and they had been slaying and murdering each other's family members just to become caliphs. So I'm saying to myself, is this what Islam was all about? All right? And I found it to be ironic that Saddam Hussein named his two sons the same name that the grandsons of the Prophet Muhammad's sons were named, which is Hussein and Hassan. And both of them got murdered. So it's just interesting that this slaughter of each other's family going back and forth, all right, is how this whole Islamic issue is going on. And, of course, the European, all right, he's aware of this. So that's why he's playing one Islamic family against another Islamic family. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's important because why I'm bringing this up to the forefront, brother, is because
I'm inclined to say this, that they all the same. That the whole the European and the Islamic paradigm are secretly kissing cousins. And you're absolutely right about that whole thing, but that inside caliphship and the whole strife behind that, it stems from Arab culture. You know, Arabs are notorious for their revenge killing and things of that nature. But the whole split, Arabs have always been split. Pre-Islamic culture and
true.
After on what they worship. If they worship,
true. But what I wanted to say real quickly, Noble, is that analyzing that whole spectrum, that is not our fight. And the thing that bothers me with our brothers and sisters is that we wind up getting into a religious space that's a fight among them, and then we wind up being a part of that as though that's our fight.
So I just wanted to say that is not our fight. That's not our reality, and that's not our world.
Right, and that's definitely one of my motivations is to show the dynamics that not even Islam had the audacity to create a new Waqf. They used all the same parts from Judaism. So the whole concept of Arabic or Afrocentric Islamic paradigms or whatever can never be honored or respected unless it's through the lens of mysticism. Because we historicity, when connected with religion, becomes a falsehood. You know what I'm saying? So I'm showing people, most importantly, though, the use of prose and the use of certain Afrocentric nuances lodged in language that connect to the initial technology. And I'm actually showing people the stuff that I haven't been able to actually say before. So I feel like the student body is definitely ready for it. Brothers like yourself and the Nola Ledge family, they have all created this atmosphere for now this to be one of my endeavors. You know, let's try to stay busy. But to show people how to create their own holy book is something unparalleled. No one has ever approached it. And I got a bunch of surprises for people. It's at 11. It's on 11/11 as well. So holler at that. That's one of my Nota Ledge numbers. You heard 11/11. You feel me? 11/11. 2 days
before your born day.
No question. 2 days before the born day, and 3 days before yours. We're going to be dropping it at the Karash Unity Center. However, we're going to be doing it a little earlier. We're going to be there at 4 o'clock, and hopefully, I got an expert astrologer sister coming through from the East Coast, but now lives here in the West Coast. She's a student of our brother Raku Cosmophysics. Shout out to him. But hopefully, I will I had this sister open up and show her her expertise and talent to the wonderful people here in California who are very eager for this message as well. We got people who have booked their tickets from England who are coming to the presentation on how this is really big, bro. You heard? How to write your own Bible. I'm trumping everybody. Everybody's talking about religion. Let's get past it.
That's true. That's peace.
Family, we are putting a call out for people to write press release, PR specialists, anyone who has a level of expertise for interfacing with the media. This is a lecture that the whole world needs to know about. Somebody needs to send an invite to the Vatican. Just like they CC everybody on that long list. Susan Rice, Condoleezza Rice, anybody is getting invited in their mail to this one. Feel me? It needs to be, like, this is one of those carrying calls that need to go beyond the gates of this particular small village. This is shit that people need to go on the mountaintop and scream. Let them know that 11/11 in the city of Los Angeles, A.A. Rashid is coming forth and showing you how to script your own book of mythos, your biblos, that which ties you to your own divinity. You know what I'm saying? You could create whatever reality that you want to create that's suffices to your experience that speaks about the testaments of your particular times. I think that's profound, you know what I'm saying? And especially the family that understands the power of the word. It's an opportunity of a lifetime, you know what I'm saying? You miss out if you want. One thing I need to know for the audience right now, will there be live stream? Rashid. Oh, his line dropped. All right. In the meantime, while we wait for the brother to call back, let me go to the Cosmophysics line and bring Brother Rock. Cool. Caller from the 516-881. 516 caller.
Peace, Lord.
Peace, everybody.
Peace. Peace.
I feel really excited, man, about this brother. Can I tell you, Bay? I'm honored, man, to hear you speak, bro. And
thank you, man.
I wish I could just plug an external hard drive into your dome. Really, download all that. Unfortunately, unfortunately, I can't, man. Yeah, no idea how bad I'm gonna do that. I got a few questions for you, man. I'm gonna make it quick. All right. First, I would like you to repeat what the name of the site or particular search engine you mentioned in the beginning with regards to legal terms.
Yes. And I'll spell it for you. It's the Investopedia. It's spelled I, N like in Nancy, V like in Victor, E, S like in Sam, T like in Tom, O like in Oscar, P like in Paul, E, D like in David, I, A, Investopedia, all right? That's a financial dictionary where you can put in financial terms and look those words up, all right? And it will give you some good insight about what's going on, because a lot of our brothers and sisters don't realize, brother, in the courtroom, all right, in the courtroom, they're not just talking law, they're talking equity, all right? And how you know this is true? Article 3, Section 2 of the United States Constitution says that judicial law should extend in all cases in law and in equity, and that's what I have on my board. So that's what I teach. I teach law and equity, and as I say, if I can't beat them in law, I can definitely beat them in equity because I know exactly what they're talking about. So anytime you get a criminal complaint, it's a bill of equity. If it's a civil complaint, it's a bill of equity. If it's a mortgage complaint, it's a bill of equity. So that's what they're talking about is finance. So, but our mindset, the way they got us thinking, we don't think that it's finance. We're thinking it's just a complaint and we failed to pay this and we failed to pay that. And so we're flowing in that direction. But when you start realizing the language that they're using, like, for instance, I had a client one time who I was doing her case and we was conversing. And the attorney had used the term saying that the note was lost. So the majority of us wouldn't comprehend what they meant when they said the note was lost. We would think that we can't find the note, the masses of people. But we don't realize that the word lost is a financial term. You see what I'm saying? So, again, we're not just talking about legal terms, because I don't hear Moors talking about financial terms. They're talking more legal terms, but they forgot the financial terms. And, again, I have to give Noble Jawali the props because he said it takes finance to lift the nation, and he also stated finance and science means lifeline. So when I heard those two terminologies being used in the literature of the prophet, all right, it was incumbent upon me, all right, to go study those financial terms, which we are today lacking. So we keep talking about putting writs together. You cannot put a writ, motion, or affidavit if you do not know financial language. If you are literally financially illiterate, you cannot possibly do it. All right? And then you're wondering why your writs is not going well or your affidavits are not going well, because it's all dealing with what? Structured finance. That's the science, brother.
Okay. He said finance and what, Bring Life?
He said science. He says finance and science means lifeline. And it's true, because if they cut off your finance, your lifeline is cut off.
Well, you know, I happen to know that our prophet was an astrologer, too. He was an Egyptian at that. That's talking about the grand square, but that's a whole other topic. You know, necessary universal law. But I got another question, okay? When you declare yourself a natural person, right, they are not supposed to, or is it still lawful for them to leave your name in all capital letters and to capitalize upon that?
Brother, let me drop something on everybody, those who's listening. I dropped this in class, and everybody just fall out the chair because they couldn't believe what I told them. First of all, brother, and you're going to hear this exclusively live on this show. Mm-hmm. First of all, when they talk about capital letters, and I have not heard no one
say what I'm about to tell you. They're not just talking about your names in all capitals. What are they talking about when they say capital letters? They're talking about letters of credit. Each one of those letters is letters of credit. This is what they're talking about. So we are missing it. So when you do what you call is sign your name to a contract, all right, you're signing your name to a contract as what? Letters of credit. So you are doing banking and don't even know you're doing banking.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how you know this is true, family?
Because they can't proceed without...
There's a form called 4419 of the Internal Revenue. All right? Go to 4419. It's called TCC, Transmittal Control Code. When you do what you call is a certified audit, when you get a certified audit of your Social Security account, you're going to get a cover sheet, and on that cover sheet, you're going to see transmittal control number. That is how they transact business or debt or finance. That's why they ask you for your Social Security number. But if they don't have your control number, they will have to apply for one of those control numbers to associate it with your Social Security number in order to be able to make the transaction happen. You see what I'm saying? So, again, Investopedia is where you can go and put these financial terms in, or if you have time, you can go to Barnes & Noble, Barron's, Dictionary of Banking Terms, and the Dictionary of Finance Investment Terms. You can get those two books and do your diligence study in those books like you would do a Black's Law Dictionary. And the best law book is Bouvier, because Bouvier is a banking dictionary that the Congressional Committee uses when they start putting these bills together, because when they talk about bills, what are they talking about? Equity. That's what they're talking about. So most of these brothers and sisters out here, they don't see the language. They don't see the science.
All right, one last question. All right. Does retaining your Social Security number keep you subjected to their jurisdiction, and can they use it without your permission to put a bond on you or anything like that?
Well, here's the science, brother. First of all, the Social Security number is a bond, all right? And the problem is we don't know how to use the Social Security number, but everybody else in the financial community is using the Social Security number, but yet at the same time, we don't know how to use it, all right? There's a way you can use your Social Security number, but first of all, you have to know something about QSUP, because we read QSUP, which is Committee on Uniform Securities Identification Procedure, all right? QSUP is referring to securities, all right? Every derivative or instrument that's out there is backed by some type of security. Brother, I don't care if it's a birth certificate, Social Security card, death certificate, marriage license, driver's license, diploma, I mean any type of contracts out there that you can possibly name, brother. Those instruments, you know, a court case, I don't care if it's criminal, civil, whatever it is out there, they're all assigned a QSUP number. All right, brother? This is what I teach in my class, because we have to be educated in finance to know exactly what they're doing to us. We don't realize that they are still running the game on us back in the time when they had put our brothers and sisters in peonage. All right, because we were never slaves. We were not a Slavic people. They put us in peonage, in voluntary servitude. This is what they put us into, and in bondage. So they're still practicing bondage, all right? Because remember now, the word emancipate, when you get an etymology dictionary, which is my main topic that I teach is etymology. That's what people normally know me for, all right? Because the etymology that I drop is unheard of, all right? People talk about etymology, but I can show you something in etymology that would just throw you to the floor. And, of course, I'm putting the book together because you ain't going to find this in no stores.
Please do give me an example. Please do. I'm starving.
The word emancipate means to make over or to deliver up as property. So what Lincoln did, he gave the states bonds. So what you need to study in the Constitution, that's the U.S. that is,
You have to study the Fifth Amendment, and you have to study the 14th Amendment. Those two amendments go together.
Mm-hmm.
All right? The 14th Amendment is supposed to keep the state in check, and the Fifth Amendment is supposed to keep the federal government in check. So you got to study those two amendments. All right? Because in the Fifth Amendment, you cannot take what? Private property for what? Public use without just compensation. So when an officer come to you, all right,
mm-hmm.
now take this down. This is very important for those who are
I'm
listening.
I'm already
it's
right.
It's called minimum contact doctrine. Minimum contact doctrine, which means you're talking about the public side and the private side. Did you know that it's illegal for a police officer or a public servant to come up to you and talk to you in your private capacity?
Yeah,
it's
illegal. I still have a pending. I have a pending issue with that regard. This officer approached me. He asked me my name because this little town is so milk white. My black ass stood out like, well, pardon the word black. I know I'm a mom. But at any rate, he walked up to me, asked me my name. I asked him, was I in violation of a crime? He said no. But it was his job to know my name. I said, nah, I have privacy. I don't want you knowing my name. I don't want you using it. At any rate, long story short, I got arrested, taken down to BID, and charged with all kinds of assault charges and stuff like that because I wouldn't let them take my prints and all that. I'm still going to court for that, right? And what occurred, I never gave my name. I never said my name in the courtroom. I never surrendered any information other than I felt like they had no authority over me whatsoever and they didn't have a victim they needed to release, right? They held me for 28 days, and I'm in the process of pursuing that. But it's still pending. They supposedly are taking me to trial, though I never took a plea, surrendered a plea or anything.
No, but take my number down. If you got a pen and paper, because we definitely got
right all I've been doing all night long.
Because we got other callers, and and I don't want to be greedy. All right. So my telephone number is 347-626-1357 is 347-626-1357, and you can call me on the side outside of this radio program because we do have other callers and we have to be mindful of them because it's getting late.
Remember my name is Ra'aku. I'm gonna get at you.
Yes, Noble. So hit me on that number more, and I'll show you what your remedies are.
Okay. I appreciate that, Lord.
All right, Noble. Peace.
Peace.
Peace. Right, family, we have 3 minutes remaining to the live stream. If you want to join us past the live stream, please call in to the station, 347-637-2135. That's 347-637-2135. Let me go to another caller. Caller from 410-410-258. Caller, peace.
Islam, Mos.
Islam.
This is Duke Bay. I'm glad to hear the brother's voice commit to you. He knows very well who I am. I don't know if the other Mos on the call. Commit
peace.
To you. It's good to hear you, brother. I did try to reach out to you back in the summer. You're saying to share some information. I see that you do have a part of the information, which is great and wonderful. You're saying, but there is some information that you need that will shut everything down 100% without no issue or no injury or anything. You're saying because in this land, you're saying the lion and the lamb shall lay together. You're saying and neither one shall be harmed come the day. You're saying because the one thing I know is that in order for us to be to be at one with us, with ourselves, and to stop this madness that's going on. Because I heard all the talk about the religious and all this other stuff. But the reality is that, when you go, you go back to that great document, which is the Declaration of Independence, and you go to the second sentence of the second paragraph, it states in there, and I quote, you say, all men are created equal under, under their creator. You say, so to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. You say, not the exact quote, but, it's right there.
True.
In reference to that, brothers, you're saying, those who are cascading, are casting out religion or what have you, you're saying the prophet, you're saying no Ghali, he gave the he He's the only man in this day and time that had erected 36 temples in a process of 3 years. You're saying, and was invited, you say, as the head of a nation state to the Pan American Conference on Private International Law.
True.
Now, if you got a brother who's done the work, okay, he solved the fix. You're saying, so all these other things that we deal with, the modalities, you're saying, what have you, with all due respect, is one thing. But if you ain't got, if you're not getting the truth, because the prophet also said that we are the custodians of the Egyptian mystery system. So you say, what did they did in the Egyptian mystery system? They passed everything by word, okay, of mouth. Those were the greatest secrets never told. You say, and so the thing is this. If we're going to be in one accord, we need to, you're saying, define who we are, because we all know the Arab is the most despicable person upon the planet. He says it in his own surah. Muhammad said it, 997. He said he was the least and the most hypothetical, the most least to believe in who he was. We know that Islam, not the Islam they're talking about with the Shiites and the Sunni, not the Islam of the Arab, you're saying, but the Islam that was here in the West, you're saying that dealt with Sufism. We didn't deal
True.
With all this other nonsense. You're
True.
Saying, and Sufi Islam, you're saying, if you take it back far enough, you'll find that nobody, there was no religion but Sufi Islam. And everybody celebrated it. You say, that's why when he wrote the Quran, when he brought up that book, you're saying, and that's the Circle 7, it was a masterful work. Now, a lot of brothers like to say, oh, there's 37 chapters and all that. There ain't no 37 chapters, there's only one chapter. And he showed that Christianity is what? You're saying, for the Europeans' earthly salvation. But he can't get his earthly salvation, you're saying, if he violates the covenant. You're saying, because we are the people. I can point to you many surahs in Muhammad's, in the Bible, in the Ethiopian Coptic Bible, and more, in all the Bibles known, which we know there are over 300. You say also in the codicils. You say here in the Mayan culture, because I've been down there. I've seen myself. You say the hieroglyphics. I've read them. Timothy U knows this, because Timothy U was down there, was also reading stuff. He was down there with the Empress. He understands what's going on. But I understand we're here to just try to help those brothers who can't get to that far of or get that complete information. But I say this. Commit to you, brother. You got my number. I got your number. Let's break bread soon. Because there's some things that other brothers need to know. And I don't mind just saying giving you the information because it freely came to me, so it's free to receive. I don't have no problem just saying sharing information. What I have a problem with is when brothers cannot, you're saying, get together and be of one accord. That's what I have a problem with. Love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice should be your mantra, should be your calling. Because when you follow the five dictates, you're saying, of any government, all else, you're saying, is available to you. You're saying, we get into these equities and all this, and you're saying, dealing with these courts and so forth, and some brothers and sisters in courts and what have you. I have not lost the case. And I've done criminal, you name it, federal, family, what have you. I've shut the judges down, run them out the courtroom if this is necessary. You're saying, I always make sure that the disposition is given right then and there. Yeah, they clear the courtroom. Yeah, they do all that little stuff. Yeah, they go through their changes. But guess what? You say, I'm not there to harm nobody, and I'm not going to allow them to harm me. So once you understand, you're saying what the attorney's roles are and the judge's roles are, they actually are holding offices that don't exist. They're not supposed to be. They are private contracts in the office. And the reason why I know this is because, you say, I'm a private banker by trade. And they get 30% of every case that comes before them. And it goes to a secret account, you're saying, with a special number, you're saying, which they use towards their retirement. when they get ready to retire. These are things that I happen to know because I personally went down to the financial district. I personally knew people and have people who showed me documentation. You say, but it's not, you say, for everybody because it's not to be abused. And again, love has to be your savior, your king, because once love is your king, all else, you say, will bow to you as you bow to them. Because everybody knows love is the greatest secret known to man. Isn't that what Jesus brought? You say, in all the prophets brought love. So with that, brothers, I say peace and love to you. You're saying, and I ask that you're saying, you know, I heard the brother who talked about his own holy book. That's right, brother, there is a holy book. That holy book is within you. It's in your pineal gland. That little gland that's inside is called the man. And when your day of judgment comes, it's your self-conscious that gets you right to see whether you did right or wrong, and your heart is as light as a feather. That's why Earth, Wind, and Fire used to always say, keep a smile on your face.
That's okay? Right.
Because that's when love comes in, and nothing else can come past love. With that, brothers, I say peace and love to you. You're saying it's day to make them.
Peace, brother. It's long.
It's long, brother.
I just wanted to veg you back on the brother's statements of what he was saying. That is, you know, he's totally on point with the statement about the lack of love. Remember, there are hundreds of Moorish organizations out there, temples, groups, and everything. And what we're supposed to be all, and what we're supposed to all have in common is love. That's supposed to be the first principle, and that's supposed to be what we are all have in common. When people hear about the Moors, they're supposed to think love. The thing that we all have in common at this point is paperwork and not love. So that's one of the things that need to get fixed, because there's too many Moors that are out there for us not to be powerful at this point. But you got to operate on that love principle. So, I just wanted to add that on.
Indeed. The brother Kometsu, you, his line dropped. He called me back. It was after the 12 o'clock mark, so he wanted to send his regards to the family. He said it was an honor to be here tonight.
For sure.
Family that wants to get in contact with him, you know, in regards to, if you didn't get to ask your question, if you have some affairs that you might have partake, you know, with the brother services or what have you, give him a call or email him, okay? And for the family that's going to be in Harlem, if you are in Harlem on 125th Street on a Tuesday evening, you can go by the National Black Theater on the second floor and see the brother do his thing live. Right, if you want to holler at him, his number is 347-626-1357. That's 347-626-1357. All right? So I'm going to take one more caller. I might play a song or something. I'm going to call it a night. You heard?
Indeed.
So let me go to caller from the 973-384 caller. Peace. Peace. All right. Come on. You're out of here. Like the Yankees. The A-Rod.
Wash.
You know what I mean?
Wash.
But look. Look at this.
Let me hear some. Hey,
hold on.
We haven't even got to talk about it.
The blue collar Detroit Lions, right? They're the Lions?
Yeah.
Or they're the Tigers, right? You know?
Detroit Tigers.
Detroit Tigers sweep the New York Yankees. That sounds like a political race to me. Blue collar versus white collar.
Wash.
Walsh.
Yeah, I got to update. My law 44 has got to get updated, B. I got I'm 44'd out to Karenga. Like, it's mad 44's popping up. They got the presidential debate. They let them speak for 44 minutes and 4 seconds. Where they do that at? All right? Ah, the brother Ray, his line dropped as well. You know, what I'm going to do, I figure I'll go into a song. Well, let me pay a bill or two. Get that out the way. All right? For the family, you know about the High Seas Expedition that is coming up next year. This is the Bonanza, the Dick Gregory and Queen of Fua cruise. All right, y'all, it's going down. It's going to be just straight divinity on the ocean. You know, high self on the high seas. Make sure that you get yourself in line and in tune so you don't get left on dry land. You dig?
Dick Gregory. Dick Gregory. That's right. Activist and comedian Dick Gregory. And master herbalist, healer, and author of Sacred Woman, Queen of Fua, cordially invites you to the 2013 Gathering of the Gods and Goddesses Cruise to the Bahamas, Friday through Monday, September 20th through the 23rd, 2013, on board the Royal Caribbean Enchantment of the Seas. Call their travel agent, Alicia, 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard, 888-636-5222, 888-636-5222. The Dick Gregory and Queen of Fua Cruise. 888-636-5222.
From times of lore, ancients believed gold aided in prolonged lifespans and cured many diseases. It is proven to enhance mental astuteness and sharpen intuition. Gold aids in optimal bodily function and increases electrical conductivity and cellular electrical impulses. Gold can balance energy fields and is beneficial for opening and balancing the crown, heart chakra, and the third eye. One of the main benefits from an active third eye, or pineal gland, is the ability to have lucid dreams. This elixir of life is now available in 2 ounces for an amazing low price of $49.99. Our bodies are our temples, and Soul Gold Liquid Drops is essential to our transformation. Order now. Go to www.soulgoldbiz.com today.